So your home didn't sell the first time. Are you fed up? It's time to make a change. Hire the Selling with CC team to get your home sold. We like houses to sell, not sit. To schedule an appointment, go to sellingwithcc.com.
Keller Williams, Jacksonville Realty.
Hey, thanks for stopping by. We're glad you're along for the ride with Tara Loggeman, Hayes Carline, Andrew Gibson, and Brent Martineau. We kick off a Thursday installment of our little confab here. I like that shirt. Just got it from the bookstore?
A little Fighting Irish. Yeah, I really just stole
it
from
Steph. T-Logs? Not really, huh?
It's okay.
Yeah, you don't really like Brent all that much. You
not
said.
Really. What's yeah. in the back?
How do I look? How do I look in it?
does he look
good?
Large.
Oh, man, I've been working out this week.
You have?
Yeah.
What are you eating over there? What's in that bag?
I got a little chicken pot pie and salad.
How about that?
So healthy.
He's a healthy guy.
He is.
I mean, nothing sells health quite like chicken pot pie. Hey, don't over there, Carline. You all right?
Doing great.
What's going on over there? He's got a little smirk.
It's been a glorious day.
You got a little smirk going on in your
face.
He does
have a smirk.
The swagger's back.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it ever went away, but it's a little more out today.
Yeah.
Is that because Ramsey had his best press availability of the year?
Was it his best?
I feel like.
Well, I mean, the fact
the
that he doesn't
do.
Trade himself in Madden football is supposed to impress us?
I don't know. I just.
Oh, well, if you don't trade yourself in Madden football, Jalen, well, then how could we ever imagine right. you wanting to play somewhere else if you don't trade yourself playing Madden football?
I saw more than 7 words in a sentence.
Well, that's a good
to an answer. I thought that
would
qualify.
Yeah, well, if we're going on word volume, then yes, it was an excellent one.
So there's all that.
I actually thought
there's
he was
all
pretty
that.
Good.
Yeah, he was.
How
just,
are you doing?
I'm just messing.
I'm fantastic. You kidding me? I got a ball game coming up on Sunday.
Yep.
Got a home game, not a night game. I'm doing fantastic. You kidding me? But I got a little pep in my step today. I got Martino's got the Notre Dame jersey on, sweatshirt, whatever you call that.
I'd
thing.
Say this, though. Okay?
Yep.
Just to everybody, fair warning.
Syracuse 21, Notre Dame 20.
You like it?
He hates Notre Dame.
Yeah, he started hating Notre Dame more when he got to know you.
That's true.
I'm not a die. I'm a fake Notre Dame guy.
You're a fraud. You're a complete fraud.
I don't pretend to be.
You know what you are? You're kind of like me.
It's a nice sweatshirt, though.
You're kind of like me with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Someone once said, hey, how are your Penguins doing? I said, well, it's pretty much got to be A, the finals, and B, I got to get to about game 3 or 4 before I get locked in, Hayes, okay?
Yeah.
If it's 2-2 in the finals, then maybe, all right?
Yeah.
And I haven't liked Notre Dame since 91. Yeah. So that goes
there you go.
Well
so
before
not
I
me?
No, it goes okay. back to the Sugar Bowl when Jerome Bettis ran for 270 yards in the second half on Florida.
He's still running right
yeah.
now. He started Louisiana. He's like Minnesota now. He's going north.
There's something about the weather today, though. Don't you kind of like it? A little refreshing?
Do you get frisky when it gets this
a little frisky.
Chilly out?
Yeah, do I look like I'm frisky?
You look a little frisky today.
I get a little frisky. I don't mind telling you. I'm a little frisky. A little frisky today. Poor Brent's like, what have I got?
Brent's like, oh, God.
Brent's like, I'm a nice guy. Why am I in the show? Why am I on this show? What are we doing here? What's the matter? Why are y'all doing?
Frangie and frisky. Yikes.
Frangie's frisky.
But I will give everybody a fair warning. I go to Starbucks like once a day, if not twice a day.
Yeah.
And because it dropped 20 degrees, Starbucks now is like a line out the door.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, hot chocolate on the menu. Everybody's.
I thought you had a cup where they like refilled it.
That
forever.
Comes after around Christmas time.
Yeah.
I'll have it again. And it's only good for like the month of January.
Oh
but I will get my money's worth that month.
You're not VIP at Starbucks?
Well, I have the app and I should have called ahead and I didn't. And I got in there and there's like 12 people in line. I'm like, come on. Mm. But I'm, listen.
You didn't
2
say,
minutes on the Frangie show
Martino,
or my coffee?
Excuse me.
Yeah.
I need to go.
Yeah. By the way, we'll be at the Brody's Discount Liquors tomorrow. Looking forward to that in Marsh Landing Park. We're out by that Target. It'll be chilly. Be chilling. You may want to stop by here. Let me tell you what you want to. Can I coach you up a little bit?
Do it.
Go get one of those Starbucks coffees.
Okay.
Then walk into Brody's. Put a little something in it.
Yeah.
You know what? Maybe the best radio show you've ever had.
It might
That's
be.
My recommendation for you, okay?
might be a resume.
May dial up your game a little bit is what we're trying to do here, Martin. No, I'm not going to lie about that. So we're looking forward. But come see us tomorrow at Brody's Discount Liquors. We're looking forward to that. Hey, a lot of things on the program today. Bill Hillgrove, the longtime voice of the Pittsburgh Steelers, will join us at 3:40 today. Looking forward to catching up with him. It is Sports and Courts. Brett Hastings comes by in the 4 o'clock hour. As always, Jimmy Himes in the 5 o'clock hour. So we've got a lot of fun stuff to do coming up. Today on the program. It's a lot of fun stuff.
Is that Browdy's? Is that the same owner as the St. Augustine Browdy's? There's like two in St.
Augustine.
I
think it's Brody. I think it's pronounced Brody's. It just looks Browdy's. I didn't know that. It has to be, doesn't it?
I would think.
Yeah.
I put their kids through college. I can tell you that.
I have no doubt.
That's awesome.
Well, then you may drink free tomorrow, okay? Yeah. But listen, we're on 3 to 6 tomorrow, okay? We're professionals, so we're not going to have any drinks until 3:30, 3:40. We're not launching the show drinking, right? Right,
Eli? I'm getting my drink on after the show.
Okay, okay.
And we're going out on a little date tomorrow night.
Yeah, you got a date tomorrow. Yeah. I heard you have a date tomorrow night.
We are going to Calford.
Well, you know what? You're gonna, and we'll be there as a team on Monday.
On Monday.
But you'll be there on Friday.
I might still be there.
I was going to say this.
You know what?
You'll
look a bit haggard at the time, but I'm prepared for that.
I feel another team building event.
That's right.
There's more team building coming.
Stop. Don't say it.
Yeah.
Don't go there.
We got all kind of fun stuff coming up on the program today. I'm talking a little hard, but did you see the Cy Youngs? They got it right.
Yeah, they did.
For me, Blake Snell in the American League from the Rays, Jacob DeGrom in the National League from the Mets, for me, were by far did you agree with that? By far the candidates, I thought.
I do agree.
Yeah,
I mean, it's simple as that. Yeah, Snell, obviously not a big name. He was up against other big names. Whether it's Kluber, I don't know if it's a big name, but he's won before.
Yeah.
And obviously Verlander were the other guys in the mix. And on the other side, DeGrom, the win total obviously scared some people away. That was the only argument you could make.
Yeah.
If you went inside the numbers on Jacob DeGrom, they were historic. I mean, yeah, I think you have to go back to guys like Bob Gibson to find numbers that Jacob DeGrom had during the season.
And you had the stats, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, that if he had gotten, 4 runs of support, he'd have been 40-0?
Or 30-0. I think a 30-1 or something like that.
How about that?
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is amazing. Yeah. It really – I mean, he was
– 4 runs, which is like average in the big leagues.
Right.
If they had done that every time he started, I think his record would have been 30-1. If he had like 2 runs, he would have been like 18-1 or something like that.
And he's a testament – how do you feel about – see, he's a – do you heavily weigh wins and losses as a barometer for a pitcher?
Well – I mean, I think you have to include it in the whole resume. I don't know about heavily because of this case. I have no problem with it, and he didn't have many.
See, for me, I've always said wins and losses is an underrated number. People say, wins and losses don't matter. All that matters is earned run average. I don't buy that. ERA's first because that means you're good all the time, and good all the time matters. And I think Jacob DeGrom certainly should have won it. When King Felix was, 13-12 for Seattle so many years back, he should have won it. So the guys who win it without great win-loss records are deserving, and DeGrom absolutely deserved this thing, right? But don't ever say wins and losses don't matter, because that means, well, here's what I want my pitcher to do. I don't want my pitcher to necessarily shut him out. I want my pitcher to make sure he gives up less than we get.
Yeah.
Right? That's the bottom line. Just give up less than I get. So if my guy's 21-6 and you say, well, wait a minute, his ERA's 4, that means 21 times he gave up less than we got. Right?
Yeah.
That absolutely matters. But DeGrom is certainly a case to the other side.
Well, it's a wild couple of years because Rick Porcello, the Red Sox, a couple of years ago, he got more run support than I mean, it felt like than anybody had ever gotten. And so he won the Cy Young. I believe it was 16, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
So, and then you go to this where he obviously couldn't get any run support and win. So I agree. It goes both ways, but you have to do what you have to do that day,
right?
You know, to deliver a W, but it doesn't always show up in the wins column.
All right, we got a lot of things we want to talk about today on the program, but I'm going to start. We're going to take a break. I'm going to start with your column on Leonard Fournette, Hayes. Hayes is our Jaguars beat writer. He's our columnist. He does a lot of stuff Jaguars and Gators related, but he certainly covers the Jaguars. He's the best beat guy out there covering the Jaguars. Made a great point, and I agree with this point. In fact, if I didn't agree with it, I just wouldn't start with it. I'm just kidding. But you lose sight of what Leonard Fournette's presence means. Forget the 23 for 54 or 24 for 53, whatever it was. The team is different. Aren't they?
Yeah.
They're different when he's on the field. They're totally different. We'll talk about that. That's how we're going to kick off the program. Bill Hillgrove at 3:40. A lot of college talk coming up today as well. A lot of fun stuff. Glad you're with us on this Thursday. This is 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
It does. It kind of feels, with what we did last year, it kind of felt like that again as far as just looking at those guys in the huddle, having Leonard in there. So it was good to have him back. You know, it was good to get him back. He hasn't played in 7 weeks or whatever it was. So for him to get out there and kind of get his bearings back about him and get back into the flow of the game and carrying the ball and doing all that, I thought it was a good start for him.
It's an old rock Thursday. Music the way it should be, or at least used to be, on the Frangie Show.
Hey, okay. Turn it up, Gibby. There's a story behind this, very wisely. My friend Brett Martineau does something smart. What do you say, Hayes, every month and a half?
About.
Yeah. He was in charge of Old Rock Thursday today. He wasn't happy with the assignment. Hayes, I think he lacked confidence. I think there was a lack of confidence in the assignment. But he reached out. You reached out to the Peeps, right?
I did. So yeah. I said, Peeps, you're picking it. And I don't know if they fully understand all like that.
Some said songs.
Got a lot of song requests, which then led me to kind of picking the band as well. But basically what I did is said, give me your pick, and I'll pick one. And in honor of you picking that one, I think it was Allison that came up with this amongst others. I'll have to double check that on Twitter. But I will donate $96 to the Tom Coughlin J Fund to get our drive toward Giving Back Tuesday going, at least for our show. So maybe you can match We'll give you some information.
Nice.
But
Job. Nice job, Allison, too.
Yeah, good job, Allison.
And we get the Steve Miller Band all day. How do you go wrong with Steve Miller?
Now, here's I want to go through some of the options we could have had.
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Please.
AC/DC. See, Allison said Fly Like an Eagle, Steve Miller Band, so then I kind of went there. And we had a couple of people that said Steve Miller Band. We had Jessica Blaylock chime in.
Yeah, she did.
I was like, this wasn't a celebrity call, so I'm not doing Jessica Blaylock.
Well, what she said was Fleetwood Mac, because she knows I love Landslide.
So yes.
She was at,
and she did that.
Yeah, and I thought your answer.
By the way, she was thinking of you.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say.
I don't really care about you
I was just going
right
to say,
now.
I thought your answer would be, this isn't about him.
Yeah.
Thank you for pointing that out,
but it's
not about
him. I saved it for
the
radio instead of Twitter. Tyler Devitt said Nickelback. Nice try, Tyler, but I'm not going there. I understand what that is. Beef, by the way, wanted Pink Floyd. And Beef, no disrespect, but I don't like you guys on the drill, so I'm certainly not going there as well. AC/DC, Creedence Clearwater, Van Morrison, Led Zeppelin. Got a lot of good selections in, but we even had Guns N' Roses, but obviously you have had Guns N' Roses since. So I wouldn't
Well,
Steve
like
Miller
2 weeks
Band.
Ago. Right, 2 weeks ago.
And I don't know if we've had them recently, but that was one of the I remember listening to the greatest hits in high school a bunch, a Steve Miller Band.
Yep.
And so I know a lot of their songs.
Good call.
So I figured that would help. So it was kind of a combination effort and for a good cause of Tom Coughlin, J Fund, Old Rock Thursday, Steve Miller Band.
Well done. Two things. Well done, A. B. Is that the longest and most eloquently you've ever talked about music? If that had to be – that was a magnificent moment right there, wasn't it?
That was
impressive. Did you guys appreciate that as much as I did?
Not really.
You didn't?
I think I should introduce them the next time they put on a show.
Yeah, you should.
There will be one little
– Yeah.
One
oh,
little,
there's a glitch
one little the moment, I'll, okay,
you,
in here.
Wait, you, now you're telling
he's
me there's a moment?
Done.
No, he's not.
Nah, but wait, there's more.
There is.
I love that.
There's one little twist. Don't get overly excited, but there's one little – little twist,
okay,
and then
I'll
provide some more background information for you.
Oh, Lord.
That's awesome. By the way, of all those offerings, I don't appreciate Van Morrison enough. Flying back from London, one of those, you know, they had that, all that music on the plane, and they had all these different collections of music. Well, they had went through the kind of the Van Morrison songbook. Van Morrison is magnificent.
Isn't Van Morrison, wasn't he part of Creedence?
No, that was John Fogerty.
But
Van Morrison, you know him from Brown Eyed Girl.
Yeah,
but that's obviously his staple. But he's good now, Van Morrison. I not that I knew every song, but I never said I'm just going to listen to Van Morrison for about 45 minutes. You ever do it?
No.
Not your guy?
But I know he's got what, like Tupelo Honey is real popular?
Yeah,
he's not a one-hit wonder.
No. Van Morrison is not a one-hit
But you don't hear...
Because Brown Eyed Girl is so...
Is so iconic. So,
correct.
Yeah.
So that's the song.
That would be the only thing, like, Van Morrison, for me, it would be tough for me to pull out 9 songs.
Yeah.
You know, if we were going to do, like, Old Rock Thursdays, but...
Well, I may pull out 9 for you next time I'm up.
That's
okay?
good.
Just so you know.
Yeah,
by the way, we're going to 7 today, so I needed 11.
Yes, you did.
All right.
It's a tough day today for you.
Making this project harder.
If you on 1010XL.com, Hayes Carline wrote a column about the difference Leonard Fournette makes to this team, and it started as early as last week. I totally agree with it. Hayes, make your point on this thing.
Well, I think the Colts obviously were selling out to stop the run on Leonard Fournette, and they did a good job of that. So, you know, you would think looking at it, it would be disappointing. But I think when you look at the offense as a whole, when you see that, okay, Fournette only got 53 on the ground, but he got 56 through the air. So it was clear that once Blake did not hand him the ball, you know, they dropped off of him. And once he had the space, he was able to do some things in the passing game. So 56 yards receiving, I mean, that is a great number for a running back who's really not billed as being, you know, Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, that dual threat kind of guy.
So I think it was a knock against him coming out.
Yes, it was a knock. So I think that was really encouraging, you know, moving forward, is can Leonard Fournette be somebody that can flirt with those 100-yard receiving games every so often? Because right now, I mean, he really looks dynamic in that aspect of the game. I was really impressed with it, considering he'd missed so much time. You look at how well Blake played. No turnovers, over 300 yards, two touchdowns. And then I really thought what they did on third down was impressive. They were over 50%. So, again, the rushing numbers weren't really there. And he did score, at least. So he did get you a touchdown on the ground. But the yardage wasn't there. But I thought the offense sort of opened up in a lot of other areas. We saw the 80-yarder to Dante Moncrief. So I was really encouraged, even though his rushing total was down, at the overall presence that I thought he brought to the offense.
That was the thing. They were different when he was there. Whether I don't know that I'm smart enough to know when the Colts are stacking the box each time or not, but they were different. I told you guys this last week. He gives you second and four. Now, you say, wait a minute. He was 24 for 53. He couldn't give you a lot of second and fours. He actually did. There were a handful of second and fives and second and fours, and they haven't had those. They've had second and eight and second and nine, and they can't play like that, Brent. I think Leonard Fournette's presence in the backfield not only changed the team last year, I think it had so much to – I mean, last week – had so much to do with last year. And, you know, have they dug too deep of a hole this year? Maybe. But I certainly think if he's healthy the rest of the season, they're a significantly better team and a different team than when he wasn't.
Well, this wasn't a surprise. I mean, listen, I think we've talked about it. They went into a season wanting to be the team they were last year, the team they tried to be at least offensively Sunday against Indianapolis. I know they didn't win, but at least that's a team they wanted to try to resemble. For the first eight games of the year, they couldn't do it. The playbook was pretty much thrown out when it comes to Leonard Fournette, right, and everything working with Leonard Fournette. And that was a huge part of it. So, I mean, I don't think this was a surprise, to the point where I said in the bye week, the only way to save the season is if Leonard Fournette plays well and plays for eight games. That was their only hope. I mean, it wasn't finding the defense and anything else. It was the only hope is that Leonard Fournette impacts the offense in a positive way. We'll see if he can do it back-to-back weeks. But what it did to Blake Bortles, but more importantly, I think what it did to Nathaniel Hackett, said a lot. And you saw some of the things they did last year. They wanted to do 400 yards of offense, albeit against the Colts, but the Colts are improved. And now can they do it again? Can they do it week in, week out? One other caveat to this, I still think Blake Bortles needs to use his legs more. Two carries for 8 yards. And I understand he threw it for 300 plucks, but throw that into the game plan a little bit more. You are watching teams do that. Marcus Mariota is effective right now because he runs.
Well, they're
third
ahead,
and
they're,
three, third and four, well, they run.
And they're heavy RPO. The Jaguars True. Run some RPO, but they're not heavy RPO.
True.
The Titans are ahead. They're like the Eagles, man. They are a heavy RPO
yep.
team.
And Cam Newton is doing it, too. He's running a lot. So I just think with the lack of weapons and trust in the receivers, you can open it up even more with Blake being smart about the run. It's a strength of his game. He's got to do it more, I think, not just two times in a football game.
And I think it'll be interesting to see how the Steelers play the Jaguars and how effective the Jaguars can be. The Steelers are doing a really good job in run defense. I think they're fourth in the league right now in it. So this will be a test. The Colts, you know, are still coming along as a defense, so the challenge is probably a little greater, even though this is a home game. So really intrigued to see. But I think you'll see Fournette's rushing numbers improve this week. And I don't know that he's going to have the impact as a receiver, but, man, that is really intriguing to see if that can start to become a consistent part where it's not just once or twice a game, but maybe three or four times, maybe five times a game, that they're really trying to get him out in open space and make him more of a receiver, because it does fly against what his draft profile was.
Yeah, we learned early last year that he caught the ball better than people thought. Mm-hmm. Remember that? I remember we watched him in training camp when he first got here and thinking, you know, he catches the ball all right. He's not clumsy-handed guy. This week's what's so intriguing. Look, the Pittsburgh Steelers know Leonard Fournette. They remember all 90 of those yards in the first game, And who doesn't remember the waving on Mike Mitchell? Was it the second game or was that the first? They both the first game. Who doesn't remember waving on Mike Mitchell for the contact? That was one of the most memorable plays in a season of memorable plays for Jacksonville, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
But I thought that one was as memorable as any play in the season.
And that's really – see, we can talk about the game planning and the open the playbook, and I believe that's a big part of it. Absolutely. But there is something about Leonard like that. The waving on.
Yes.
Today, a lot of conversation about nicknames that he's given players. He's a fun-loving guy. I think there's been some questions, and I'm not sure you don't know this, but you could wonder if he even lost some respect in that room a little bit in the first half of the year because, like, waiting for him. Is he going to play? And when you don't play, it's hard to be that fun-loving,
no question,
swagger guy. Mm-hmm. But now that he's out on that field, he brings that. I think he brings that to the huddle. I think he brings that to the sideline. I think all those things, kind of what Ramsey does bring on the back end, or a Telvin Smith even, you know, gets them going. This is a team that hasn't played with much swagger the last 5 or 6 weeks. He brings that back. Now, it's got to come with a win. I get it. But he does bring that element.
Is it enough of a spark to spark a win this
weekend? I think it is. I do, Tara. I think they're going to win. I people think I've lost my mind. Some people think you've lost your mind. Other people say, well, that's just because you don't want to look like a Steelers fan because you rooted for the Steelers before. So you're trying not to look like a Steelers fan, so you're picking the Jaguars. It isn't any of that. I think they're going to win. I think they are, too. I think it's one of those weird games when it doesn't make sense that they would win. There's no agenda there. I don't think they're better than the Steelers. I don't think they're going to the playoffs. I think the Steelers are going to go and maybe even make a deep run. But I think this is one of those games when it happens. I just feel that way.
There's one element to that, in my opinion. We're talking to Leonard. We're talking to open up the playbook. We talk swagger, all this stuff that we're talking about. These receivers have to start making plays, and they can't cost them games. I mean, listen, we can go back and forth on Blake and the weapons, and we've talked about that, you know, ad nauseum, really, for more than a year, it feels like. But the bottom line is they are not making plays.
Right.
And I mean, I was just watching the replay. Actually, I wasn't even watching. I was listening to the Rams Seattle game from last week. And like three times in 20 minutes, I heard, what a play. What a play. What a play.
Right.
By a receiver. Nobody makes a play for this Jacksonville Jaguar football team on offense. Again, I'll give you Dante Moncrief slipping a tackle. But outside of that, nobody goes and grabs a football, makes a play. Instead, they've been killing the football team with the plays they're not making.
It's not a very good core. I mean, the reality is...
But that's who you got.
Yeah, no,
and somebody's still going to make a play.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm telling you the reality is I'm never surprised when a very mediocre to bad receiving core as a group doesn't make a lot of plays. You're right. Somebody needs to make one, and then we'll maybe feel like they're a little better of a core. But it never surprises me, and I never feel bad. I'm never like, whoa, what happened? When a core that's not all that good doesn't play all that well. So we'll see. Let's take a break. Hey, when we come back, let's talk some Steelers football. Bill Hillgrove, the longtime voice of the Steelers, joins us. That's after this on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM.
You know, it starts up front, you know, with their pass rush. And this group has an unbelievable pass rush with their front four. Their linebackers are some of the fastest you'll ever play against. And their secondary is as good as the secondary you're going to play. So there's really nowhere to start and finish with this group. They're just that good. So, like I said, this will definitely be the biggest challenge for us.
It's an old rock Thursday. Music the way it should be, or at least used to be, on the Frangie Show.
The voice you heard was Ben Roethlisberger, the Steelers quarterback. Steelers are in town to play the Jaguars on Sunday. And it is a pleasure now to welcome in the longtime voice of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Bill Hillgrove, who joins us now. Bill, what a pleasure to have you on. How are you, man?
Well, pleasure's all mine, and my team is getting better, and that's a good sign. This stench that was September has disappeared.
Yeah, I hear you. Hey, what's the key? What's the key to them playing so much better? Obviously, James Conner's played at a great level, and the defense has improved, but nobody knows this team like you do. Why do you think they've played so much better?
I really think it goes back to training camp when Ben never threw a meaningful pass to Antonio Brown. And so they didn't start to reestablish their chemistry till the season started. And it took a while. And once that happened, then everything else fell into place. Juju Smith-Schuster, I call him Hines Ward Jr. He not only is very effective going down the field and catching the ball, but also a pretty physical blocker. And I think those two things, a healthy Vance McDonald at tight end, has certainly helped. And, this O-line, it's pretty special. It's a lot of pedigree there, and I know we've missed Marcus Gilbert. I think he has a chance to play Sunday. at right tackle, but Matt Filer came in, and you know that line never skipped a beat. Ben is really appreciative of their presence because he's only been sacked 12 times.
Bill, thanks for joining us. This is Brent Martineau. They're they're an interesting team sometimes. Of course, the Le'Veon Bell stuff, but even going back to last year, last couple of years, there's some drama at times. It reminded me of the Giants, you know, even when they were good, or the Cowboys when they were good, that they could play through that stuff. On Sunday for those 3 hours, all that stuff really did not matter. How have they remained so focused, and how much does Mike Tomlin deserve credit for that?
Well, he deserves a lot of credit. He knew that they were below the line in September, and he knew that certain pieces weren't available that are now. And I think he trusted Keith Butler to do a good job getting that defense organized. And now they are. I mean, as I heard was that your quarterback with that quote I just heard a few minutes ago, saying that, they do bring a lot of pressure. Cam Hayward and Stephon Tuitt are really, they're Pro Bowl players. And Javon Hargrave has emerged as a nose tackle. And you combine that with their linebackers and the speed that they have, it's been pretty effective. And, you know, when that happens, it takes the pressure off the back end. And Joe Hayden is a good leader. Mike Hilton is a great slot cornerback. Morgan Burnett is a good guy on tight end. So, you know, it's all coming together. And knock on wood, they're staying relatively healthy.
Hey, Bill, this is Hayes Carlion. What kind of strides has T.J. Watt made this season for the Steelers?
Well, they flip-flopped sides, he and Dupree. And now he's coming from the left side, which is the quarterback's open side. And, you know, he's got a variety of moves. I think if, to be fair, to compare him to Bud Dupree, Bud is, you know, a flamethrower. He's got to go on the outside shoulder of that left tackle. But TJ, he can make moves up and under, rip, and all that other jargon that is used mostly by players. And so his versatility in that regard has really been a great presence. He's relentless. He doesn't stop till he gets to the quarterback.
Bill Hillgrove with us, the voice of the Steelers. All right, Bill, last year, obviously Jacksonville had some success up there, won two times against Pittsburgh, including in the playoffs. What's the feeling about this Jaguars team among Steeler folks?
Well, I think, you know, they're taking the mindset that it's the next game on the schedule. It's a conference game, so it's important. And, they're just going to try to stick to their knitting. It's been a good formula ever since they started this win streak when October arrived. And if you look at Tomlin's history, his November especially and December teams have a great winning percentage. So that's the way they're looking at it.
Bill, this franchise has been so good, obviously, for so long, but this rendition of them has been so good, and it feels so good. But you look back, and they haven't been in the Super Bowl since 2010, which is crazy to think about with the success and the teams they've had. Obviously, Patriots have been in the way. Other teams have been in the way, like the Jags last year. But do they feel like the window – I mean, this team, this collection, I mean, that window only stays open so long. And, yeah, you can rebuild it with young players like Connor and Watt, but – is there a pressure on them each and every year? Do you feel it there that builds to go get it done?
I really think Ben is cognizant of that. You know, he knows that his window is closing. But that having been said, the best quarterbacks, and you look at any great quarterback, they play their best ball after the age of 30. And he's in that period of time right now. And you can feel it. The game is slow for him. You know, he just rarely makes a mental mistake and rarely – does he move the wrong way in the pocket? And it's an uncanny ability. And, that window's going to close because he's growing long of tooth, as they say. And so is Antonio Brown. You know, I mean, he's now on the other side of being a veteran. And, they realize that this possibility is there for them. So, you know, the way the current situation in the NFL, you got to win your division. And that's their focus right now. Win the division. And then worry about all the other things later on. As Mike Tomlin likes to say, the road along this journey gets narrower the more you get into December. And so that's the approach they're taking. I think it's a good one.
Bill, you mentioned Vance McDonald being back and healthy. He and Jesse James have really combined to put up some great numbers, 740 yards, roughly four touchdowns. What makes them stand out? I know they don't get a ton of credit because of Antonio and Juju. But what makes them a special duo, and what kind of success do you think they can have against a Jaguar defense that really struggled to cover the tight end last week in Indianapolis?
Yeah, I think to make a distinction between them, Vance is much more physical than Jesse, a better blocker. And you know, he's a load. He's tough to bring down once he gets the ball. If you saw the stiff arm against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on the 75-yard touchdown pass, it was a plant. Jesse is more of a flex tight end, more of a receiver type. And he is 6'7", so he's a nice, big, inviting target for Bet. And I think it's been a great duo. And I think, you know, since Heath Miller retired, they've had trouble manning up that position because, you know, in his prime, Heath was a great blocker and a great receiver. Very few tight ends can combine those two things. So it's a good, positive situation.
Bill Hillgrove with us, the voice of the Steelers. Bill, the Le'Veon Bell thing is behind them now. It certainly seems like the Steelers have moved on without missing a beat, which is amazing to lose a player that good, have him never play for you, and not stumble at all. Am I reading that right? That's behind them, and people aren't worried about it.
Yeah, and give them credit. They didn't make it a point of focus. They focused on who was there,
yeah.
And that was Tomlin's dictation. But, you know, when it went on and on, and the, you know, the saga continued, it was pretty apparent to his teammates that his hand was not in the pile. And so had he come back, it would have been tough. He might have gotten a few lookout blocks. Look out.
Yeah. I think he would have gotten a lot of – it seemed like he was getting a lot of lookout blocks if he'd have come back.
Yeah, you don't want that situation. Obviously, Bill, down here, no love loss for the Pittsburgh Steelers, but I do think it's hard not to appreciate and love the story of James Conner and what he's been able to do. How much have you been able to talk to him? Can you give us a little insight on what kind of guy he is? He's obviously been a tremendous player for them this year.
I sure can. I was privileged because he played at Pitt to get to know his family. And he's been on my boat a couple of times at Conneaut Lake, which is a couple of hours north of Pittsburgh. He's yes, sir, no, sir, thank you, please. When he was having his chemo, he was more concerned about the other patients at the Hillman Center than his own situation. And that's the kind of a kid he is. As soon as he took his last treatment, he went out to the driveway, grabbed a basketball, and did a slam dunk in celebration. I mean, the guy is... He's a beast. I think he dishes out as much punishment as he receives. You watch, he's got a mighty stiff arm. And he's quick and he's fast and he's in the best shape of his life. So it's a great story. I keep telling James, if they make a movie, can you make sure I get a cameo?
On that boat.
On the boat, like. That's right.
Bill is go ahead.
To take it one step further, I think Marquise Pouncey hit the nail on the head when he said James would not have been a third-round pick had it not been for cancer. He would have been a first-round pick, and he's looking like it right now.
It's funny you mentioned that because I was going to ask you about Marquise. You know, we cover the Gators here very closely, and he was a big part of two national title teams at Florida. But what kind of legacy is he now in a position to perhaps leave with the Steelers, who have had so many excellent offensive linemen in their storied history? But where is Marquise in terms of maybe where he might be down the line if he's able to give Pittsburgh, you know, two or three more great years?
He's picked up where the previous tight end left off, and I'm not a tight end, it's center Dermonti Dawson, who's in the he's in Canton. And I think Marquise is on his way. He's athletic. You know, the Steelers pull the center. Most teams can't do that. And with David DeCastro's ability to also block on the move, you know, they can be devastating. So it's been a great legacy, and he won't let anybody near Ben. When Eric Reed had that illegal hit on Ben, I didn't think he should have been thrown out of the game, but Pouncey was the first man on the scene. And he was letting Reed know that that was not appreciated. And I think when you have that sort of thing, you know, football's the ultimate team sport. And if everybody cares about one another, you're probably, based on that, going to win some games.
Well, Bill, I know you do Pitt football and I think basketball as well. I just want to let you know you may want to come down this week with your boat so then you can go on it again like in January.
Potentially,
because it could be Tax Slayer Gator Bowl.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
And if we play golf, I'll only have time for 9.
Well, we can certainly manage that.
Yeah, we can fit that in. Hey, Bill, are you surprised, by the way, that Pitt's this good, 5-1 in the league, and probably going to win that Coastal? Did that surprise you guys up there?
Well, having watched the beginning of the season and the blowout losses to Penn State and UCF, I had my doubts. And a really bad loss at North Carolina. Everybody had their doubts. But Pat Narduzzi just, you know, kept his eye on the target. And this team is getting better. Taysir Mack, the receiver, is healthier, so their passing game is starting to come around. And Lord knows they can run the football. So I think it augurs well. They would love a shot at Clemson, but, man, he keeps them focused on the next game. They got to get by Wake, and then you worry about Miami and Clemson, and you take them one at a time because that's the only way you can play them.
Bill Hillgrove, the terrific play-by-play voice of the Steelers, also calls Pitt games. Great to have him on the program here on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. Bill, thanks so much for taking the time. Look forward to seeing you on Sunday.
Thanks, guys. Looking forward to it.
All right. Bill Hillgrove, a legend, by the way, a legend in NFL circles.
He's been doing the Steelers, I think, I read, since 94.
Yeah. Yeah.
25 years, I think.
Yeah, 25 years. He's 77 years old.
Yeah.
Still sharp as a tack, of course, and I just think he's outworking you, Frangie. I mean, he's doing Pitt football and basketball. Yeah. He's doing Steelers. And he obviously has to go deeper into January often because they go there a lot.
Yeah, he's
what the heck, man?
He's among many that have outworked me and about many that continue to outwork me. But it's great having him on. Bill really is a legendary voice and a very, very nice, as you could hear in the interview, a very nice man. He is he's well known in that area. I don't know Bill. I've met him a few times. I don't know Bill very well. But my friend Greg Brown, who is the play-by-play voice, the TV play-by-play voice of the Pirates, he and Joe Block, of course, we know here, they double-teamed the Pirates, says Bill's a genuinely, genuinely nice guy. Those guys all kind of know each other relatively well. So it's kind of great to have Bill Hillgrove on the program today. Let's take a break. We've got more to do. We'll talk a little college football. I got a lot of fun stuff coming up with the program. Thanks for stopping by. This is 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
The Frangie Show on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
It's an old rock Thursday. Music the way it should be, or at least used to be, on The Frangie Show.
Hey, we're glad you're with us. We continue on. Hour number two is upon us. Steve Miller Band on Old Rock Thursday. You like Steve Miller Band, T-Log? You a big fan?
I'm not a huge fan, but I like him.
Love Steve Miller Band. I've never seen Steve Miller Band live. Never. Of all those 70s bands I've seen, I've never seen him.
Him recently, didn't he?
He did. I've still never seen him. I went to see him, and I told a story before. I was in Pittsburgh. Went to see him, and Don Felder opened for him, like a guy that used to be in the Eagles, who was, like, terrible. And right when he was about to play, it was an outdoor concert. It stormed like you've never seen in your life. Canceled.
That was it.
That was my last crack at Steve Miller. So I need Steve to stay alive long enough for me to see him, Hayes. That's what I need.
The best is when he got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And just ripped them.
He did.
Ripped them.
He ripped everybody.
For being so cheap. And they only pay for, like, one person to come.
What an awesome.
And, I mean, it was like his entire. So it was great.
Hey, folks.
See, Terrell Owens has company.
That's right. Folks, it is time now for What Florida Said. It is brought to you by the Kitchen and Flooring Design Center on Southside Boulevard. Beautiful two-story showroom. Head over there. Call them at 425-6919. Or log on to floorsandkitchen.com. They'll do your floors, your kitchens. They'll do your bathrooms. Guys, they've done our floors, bathrooms, and they'd love to do it for you as well. The Kitchen Flooring Design Center brings you What Florida's. I've said it before. I'll stay on it. Hayes, I am floored by how bad Miami became, the University of Miami. They are sitting on 4 losses in a row. I think they might beat Virginia Tech, but I'm not sure. It is a struggling team. The only reason they might beat Tech is Tech's really bad, too. I never thought this would happen. That is what floored me. And now word is out, as you can imagine, that all the ex-players, because the ex-players love to gripe, all the fans, everybody is all over Mark Richt, so much so that Blake James, the AD, a well-respected AD, with the team 5-5 and 2-4 in the league, a team that was expected to win 10 or 11 games, says he's going to sit down with Richt, not force him to make staff changes, but they're going to put their heads together. It's never healthy when the AD says, hey, I got to go sit down with my coach and fix things, is it?
It is not. And I think it's incredibly disappointing for Miami because look at the window that they're missing.
Right.
Florida State is a disaster. Florida is in a transition where maybe they're going to come out of it a little quicker than what we thought, but they're still a solid, certainly not spectacular team and program, this is really the time where, I mean, Mark Richt should be cleaning house and dominating this state and you know, being really the talk of the state. And they've really blown their chance. I mean, he's in a pivotal year, year three. I mean, that's when you really want to start to see some strides being made, and they're going backwards. I think they're 5-8 now in their last 13 games. It's incredible. And he's done a nice job with the defense. I think that's what's disappointing is defensively the Hurricanes have really done a great job. They're fourth in the nation in total defense. They're fourth in pass efficiency defense. And they're fourth in third down defense. So they do a lot of great things well on defense. So that's what I think is most disappointing. You hire Mark Richt and you think, okay, going to have a great offense, going to develop quarterbacks.
Right.
And that's the area of the program right now that is in the worst shape possible. So I think it's disappointing, and it does make me wonder when we're having this conversation next year where Mark Richt stands.
Yeah, and his recruiting has been good. How it will affect now 2019, we'll see. But he just came off that big recruiting year. So, I mean, there's not enough here to make a change, in my opinion. The whole meeting with Mark Richt, I mean, listen, they meet no matter what. They don't usually say they're going to meet, but they meet no matter what with the AD at the end of every season. So I think it's disheartening probably more than anything else, because if you go back to just before this time last year, it was like, wow, look at the job Mark Richt's doing. Look at Miami. We're talking, are they back? Can they get back? Yeah, it's still a little smoke and mirrors, but how good can they be? They got that great recruiting class coming in. They knew this defense was going to be good. And then just what Hayes said, when you can't get the quarterbacks going, and you've got two places right now that can't get the quarterbacks going in the state of Florida, and that is Miami and the University of Florida, well, then you're stuck in the mud. And right, until you do that, and who's going to find it first, then you're going to be stuck. Yeah. Now, Florida State's stuck in the mud, and they have a couple of quarterbacks,
yeah,
so that's interesting too.
And you know my take on this. I don't think Miami's ever coming back. I don't think that doesn't mean they won't have a one-off season where they win 11 games or 12 games or – but they're never coming back. They don't have the infrastructure. They don't have the resources. They don't have the booster base. It's too hard to draw there when they're not good. There's too much going on in Miami. I don't think they're ever coming back. I think Florida State, this is a lull that they will overcome. I don't think it about Miami. I don't think they're ever coming back. Having said that, though, I got thinking about this. I think Mark Richt's the right guy. I hope he doesn't get fired. But I'm thinking about this whole coaching carousel thing that's about to jump up. You know the name that's hot out there now that I never thought would be hot again? The name you see every time the carousel's up? Have you seen this? You follow the carousel? You guys follow the silly season and all?
I mean, following really the Brohm stuff to Louisville,
yeah,
and
right,
all that.
Which Les Miles is in the game.
Yeah, I've heard his name. Kansas
for sure. Probably Purdue if Brohm leaves. One other job I think he's got a great chance at. You like Les Miles? Who doesn't like Les Miles, right?
I like Les Miles. I always thought he didn't get enough credit because, I tell you, every time he played the Gators, he had a trick ready.
And they always worked.
And it always worked. They executed it well. I thought Les Miles did a nice job at LSU. I didn't think he should have been fired. It is surprising to me that those – like you throw out those names, Purdue, Kansas – that's not enough. To me, that's not the carousel.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it.
Yeah,
it's
you're
a Division
right.
One job.
You're right, but that's the job he could get.
That's the horse that's broken somebody vandalized it, and no little kid wants to get on it. Like, so
the bad part of the carousel.
Yeah. So
rusty and
– yeah. So, I think Les Miles, you know, to your point about Miami, I don't know that he'd be, like, the right fit there if he's still out in a year and Mark Richt can't get it going, and after 4 years they cut him loose. But I still think Les Miles would be a really good hire for a job, you know, a little bit more of a pedigree than Kansas and Purdue.
He needs strong coordinators, okay? He's not an X's and O's guy. But I think he would recruit like crazy. He's super charismatic. He's a super good guy. I've told two Les Miles stories. I did a bunch of LSU games with Touchdown Radio. One, we're doing Ole Miss. Met him out on the field, one of the nicest guys of all time. Spent a lot of time with you, friendly. It was the same day I saw Hugh Freeze on the field. We didn't get either one of them the day before. One of the nicest guys I've ever been around. Really, really nice guy. The other thing about him, when they won the title in, was it 07, I think? Did he win the title? Or was that Saban? It was him, right?
It was Miles.
He won it the year after.
Yeah, Florida won it, and then LSU won it, and then Florida won it.
Yeah, so Miles' title was in 07. I'm doing the LSU-Auburn game. Now, I got a bad angle of this. We're in the right corner. It's a bad angle for national radio. And I don't know if you guys remember the game or not, but Auburn is ahead by 2, I think. I think Auburn's up 2. LSU's got a third down at like the Auburn 24. It would have been about a 41, 42-yard field goal. LSU had a good kicker. And there's 8 seconds left in the game. Do you remember this game play? There's 8 seconds left, okay? 42-yard field goal to win it. Les leaves his offense on the field. They throw a pass in the left corner of the end zone. Risky as heck. Guy catches the touchdown pass with 1 second left. And LSU wins the game and wins the national title. Remember the play?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, that wasn't the right decision, but it worked out. He's the guy that everything works out for. I'll also tell you another funny story about that play. It's the only play in my play-by-play career, okay? I did 7 years of touchdown radio. I've done 5 years of Jags. I've done football for 12 years. I've done baseball, basketball probably for 10, 12 years before that. It's the only play of my play-by-play career that I literally didn't see it. We were blocked in. It was in the far left corner. So far, you know, the far end, but far near, if you will. Okay, so I got no angle. Can't see it. Throws in the corner of the end zone. You see the guy's got a step, and it looks like a pretty well thrown ball, but you can't see the ball come down. But it's the moment of the game. You don't want to miss the call. You don't want to not call it. You don't want to say I can't see it. So I lost sight of it. I saw the LSU fans lose their mind. And I yelled, touchdown. Toretta looks at me, and our spotter looks at me like, we can't see it. You can't call touchdown if you don't see it. Couldn't see it. And we didn't have a truck feed. Truck feed is real time. We had a delayed TV feed, so I couldn't watch the television. Catches it in the corner. I yell, touchdown, LSU. I mean, you really yell it out. Everybody looks at me. It's a touchdown. So they win the game. And our producer goes, what were you doing? I said, I was freaking guessing what I was doing. But all the fans jumped up. I said,
It's a good sign. Yeah, 85, right. 90,000
If you're going to guess,
up.
It's an educated guess, right? But I remember that play. But Les Miles is a good guess. I think Les can recruit. You said something last week about older coaches. I'm not so sure some older coaches shouldn't get recycled. Not all of them. I mean, there's no one way to do it. But I'd be fine
if Les Miles got a job. Yeah, but even like Kansas, to me, I'd go try to find that young guy that's going to outwork people and go get – You know, I mean,
but they've tried that.
I know, but you got to keep trying.
If Kansas hires a young guy, he's gone in 3 years, one way or the other.
True, that is true.
He's either gone to Nebraska or he's fired.
That's good.
That's the problem with that. We'll take a break. Tell Tara's up next. Send your questions at Tell Tara, T-E-R-A. Tara will have all of our answers. That's next. So stay with us.
Time to Tell Tara.
Go!
Tweet your question for Frank, Brent, and Hayes to at Tell Tara. Best question earns cool swag. Tell Tara, brought to you by Beards Jewelry.
And congratulations to Beards Jewelry on celebrating their 38th anniversary, 38 years of serving generations of Jacksonville families. Go see my friends John and Ben at Beards Jewelry and tell them Tara sent you. All right, so let's kick it off with Sandy, who's asking a really good question. Why are there so many injuries with the Jaguars? Does training help to decrease the chances? Are the trainers and players paying attention? I know this happens all over the league, but why so many here?
I think it's random. It's probably bad luck. Although I will say when they had no injuries last year, I gave them a ton of credit. So I do think when you don't have injuries, I think you've done a lot of really good things. And that's players, that's coaches, that's the medical staff, the nutrition staff, the strength staff. I do think that when you have an injury-plagued year, I don't know that that's anybody's fault. So to me, it's one of those things where when it doesn't go your way, it's more bad fortune. When it goes your way, then I think it's more the work that people put in. But other than maybe, I mean, there's nothing you could do about Marquise. I mean, he got hit directly into the knee. Seferian Jenkins is a core injury. I don't know that there's a whole lot you can do to prevent that kind of stuff. Maybe Leonard with the hamstring could have been maybe a little bit better in terms of prep for the year, but that's, I mean,
it's luck of the draw.
I think yeah. That's it. I think you're sort of grasping for straws. So I think it's more, to me, when it works in your favor, it's to their credit. When it doesn't, it's just bad luck.
All right. This one's from Bethel RM. I have moved on. Reality has set in. This team will not make the playoffs this year. What off-season moves do the Jags need to make to salvage this team and return them to playoff contention?
No, it's a good question. Don't give up just yet.
Come on, Bethel. Hang in there, Bethel.
Listen, I think the last seven games, actually, to that question, will decide a lot of that. How much, first of all, can Blake salvage something? Some of these players that have big contracts, do they look good so you want to move forward with them, or are you going to cut them loose? Do people start aging quicker than you thought they might age? I think there's a lot of that to be determined still in the next seven games. And by the way, if you go 4-12 or 5-11, I mean, you could get kind of a reboot in a lot of different areas. If you finish out 7-9, 8-8, 9-7, if they were to win out, well, then you're going to sit there and say, hey, we had a lot of injuries. We went through a tough spell there. We just missed this thing. Let's not blow this thing up. We're still closer than we think.
Pass catchers for me to the question. Pass catchers, playmakers. Decide what you want to do with quarterback. Maybe a quarterback. I think they need playmakers.
All right, and this is along those same lines from Brandon Skinner. If this terrible season continues, what position should the Jaguars draft in the first round? Quarterback or receiver?
Well, it's one of the two for me. It depends on who's there. Hayes, you think quarterback no matter what, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah, it depends on who's there. I think they've got to think quarterback to create the competition. Now, one thing, if you draft a first-round quarterback, you're pretty much saying that's your guy, whether it's your guy this year or next year, but you're pretty much saying that's your guy. So if you draft a quarterback, you've made the decision that Bortles is no longer in your plans, and maybe they have. But I would think about that. But I would go get a receiver. I think this team needs dynamic pass catchers. I admire teams like the Ravens who took Hayden Hurst and Mark Andrews in the draft, two really good tight ends. I admire teams like the Eagles who already had Ertz and added Dallas Goedert. I think you got to go get weapons. Weapons for me.
All right, this one's from All Sports High. Hey, gang, with the season winding down, is it too early to begin lobbying for the Jags to appear on HBO Hard Knocks?
What is that, Hayes? The final six or eight teams?
Hayes, you're the official spokesman of Hard Knocks, so what's the answer here?
Yeah, it's what was your question?
Isn't it like the worst six teams or worst eight that might have to do it?
Well, the ones that have to do it, I think the Jaguars can't be made to do it because they made the playoffs last year. I think it's only the only teams that can be made to do it have a playoff absence of 2 years or more. And there's a couple other variables. So I don't think they're going to volunteer to do it. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you that. I don't think the league can make them do it, because I think the Jaguars do fall into that category where they can't be made to do it. So I think it's going to be another one of the 32.
All right. This one's from Zach Morgan. Hey, Telterra, is Verlin, and I hope I'm saying this right, Dormini, the head football coach at Trinity Christian, the most winning in the state? He has been there forever.
Verlin Dormini, we all know Verlin well. I don't know where he. I wouldn't think he's
Corky
his
Rogers.
Yeah,
think he's saying active.
Active.
Active. Yeah.
I wouldn't even think active, but it's probably close.
Yeah.
Yeah, I honestly don't know from a state championship perspective.
I would say total wins or total titles. But Verlin's very good. I mean, Verlin's very good. Verlin has won a bunch of games. I mean, Trinity's a great program. I mean, that is a one you go statewide, best programs. IMG, I guess, is best because of what they're different. In terms of FHSAA programs, is there a better one going right now than Trinity? I mean, statewide? Is there a better program going right now? And it may be, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. I'm not
Or one of the American Heritage?
Yeah, like
better?
Those kind of school. Well, yeah, I mean, listen, Trinity just, they didn't win last year, but they won four in a row.
I mean, so they won four straight state titles.
But then you would just, they won it in the 3A level, so then you would say, okay, what about the classification difference?
I hear you.
They're up there. Both answers are yes, they're in the conversation. I don't know exact numbers and who might be better, but I will say this about Trinity. Trinity might have, like, its best team
yeah, right.
in the last half dozen years, and they've got four state titles.
All right. We have a couple questions related to the prize that we're giving away, which is, by the way, a pair of tickets to see Rudy in concert featuring the Jacksonville Symphony at Daly's Place this Saturday. Eric Squires is asking, who's the Rudy player this year?
Anywhere?
Or I think he's talking about the Jags.
Yeah, I don't. Is there?
Who would be the Rudy?
Yeah, I don't know that there's an unheralded guy. Is there?
Well, I think
Keelan Cole last year.
Tyler Patman.
Tyler Patman. Yeah, okay.
Patman's a guy that bounced around six different organizations. He's stuck, and then he's actually had a big role.
Yeah.
Well,
Rudy didn't have a big role. It might be Tommy Bowe. Okay.
Yeah,
don't
true.
Sleep on Tommy Bowe, okay? Whatever you do over there, don't sleep on Tommy Bowe, Mark.
Oh, that's true, because you got to call for him. Sure. So, Tommy.
Right.
Tommy.
Right. So maybe, probably Tommy. I'm going Tommy Bohannon.
Sure.
All right, and this one's
Come on, entertain the damn question, Hayes.
Why you got to be grumpy?
What the hell? I mean, you said you had your swagger back.
Yeah, I'm
saving it. Would it have been David Greenidge?
David Greenidge could be, too, yeah.
Ah, there you go. The belldozer.
There you go.
All right, and this last one is from Cast Iron Jags. This is random. Do you think Tony Baselli will go to Rudy?
Nah, I'm going
to
drive him. Because he hates Notre Dame. So, you know, he hates Notre Dame.
Well, he should. He's a USC guy.
Yeah. Well, not only that, they wouldn't recruit him.
How's USC doing?
I ask him that all the time. He's so obnoxious. He's the most obnoxious fan ever. He'll send me a text every time Florida's stinking, but then he acts like USC's doing it. USC's awful.
Haven't heard from him in weeks.
But by the way, here's this guy that turned out to be one of the greatest college players of all time, and Notre Dame didn't offer him. So, does he strike you as the kind of guy that would forget that?
Not really.
Not really. So
they'll let anybody in at USC.
Obviously. He's proof.
All right, and the tickets to Rudy go to Tony Baselli. Just kidding. James Bethel. James, you are our winner today.
All right, we'll take a break. Sports and Courts is next. Counselor is here, Brett Hastings. So stay with us on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM.
It's Sports and Courts, where we discuss legal issues that affect the world of sports, brought to you by the law offices of Brett Hastings.
The counselor's here. How you doing, brother?
Doing great.
Good to see you. How's everything?
It's good. It's busy. You know, the week before Thanksgiving, a lot of stuff's going on. So,
I imagine. When are lawyers most busy?
With us, we've got a lot of these insurance carriers who drag it out, and then we get in this last quarter and start to be more reasonable and do what they should have done all along, primarily because I think they get to the end of the financial year and the things that they know are losses, so they tend to engage us a little bit more. We get more cases resolved for clients in this quarter than we actually do during the other parts of the year.
All right. Brett McMurphy wrote a story essentially quoting Trayvon Grimes' dad is saying that Zach Smith used a racial slur against him. The word is out now that Urban and/or Ohio State is considering legal action against Brett McMurphy. What are the rules? I mean, what are the rules in terms of, I guess it would be libel because it's written content, right?
Right.
What? Take me through it.
Well, it's what we call defamation, right? And so when we hear libel, okay, that's written defamation. And we hear slander, that would be verbal defamation. And essentially you're putting somebody, making a false statement that puts them in a poor light and could cause, damage to their reputation. That's, there are some intricacies to this, but that's the general rule. Now, what's unique, right, is that you can't go and make a false statement about somebody just in general. But when somebody is what we call a public figure, there's a higher standard. Probably everybody here at some point in your journalism classes learn it, and we learn it in law school. The big case is called New York Times versus Sullivan, and it has a standard of what it calls actual malice, okay? Because if somebody goes out and defames, right, and when we talk about defamation, there are things that they call defamation per se, right? Something that is so defamatory that if you say it about somebody and it's not true, you should almost get damages. And those are things like saying someone is a pedophile, saying someone is a convicted felon, saying someone is a drug dealer or something, okay? So those are what types of things that we're talking about with defamation. Here, someone used the N-word, right? Beyond unacceptable, okay? And Brett McMurphy went and he wrote this article as it relates to it. Okay. Who could be a plaintiff, right? The person who brings a lawsuit. Well, clearly it would be Zach Smith, who would be the wide receiver coach. Then you're kind of moving a few degrees out if you're saying it's Urban based on what the story says, or if you're saying that it's Smith that's the AD at Ohio State, or even potentially Ohio State, right? But what's important is if you're talking about Urban Meyer or you're talking about Gene Smith, you are talking about people who are what we'd call limited public figures. So then you would have the even higher standard in defamation. Normal defamation is negligence, right? What would a reasonable person do? How would you reasonably go about vetting it? Whereas with actual malice, which is higher to afford protection to the First Amendment, to people in the media, you have to show that essentially there was just a reckless disregard for the truth. You had to almost know it wasn't true, and you said, you know what, I'm going to go out and I'm going to go and get this person. So I think it'd be incredibly tough. I don't, you know, Urban is not going to go and sue on this. Why is the other reason they're not going to do it, right? One of the things that Brett McMurphy said in the story is he had sent out public records requests. He didn't get the records back. But that's what the case is about. Is this true or not? So then if Ohio State says, or Gene Smith says, or Urban Meyer says, I'm going to go and sue you, clearly the attorneys and everybody involved are going to have subpoena power, and you're going to be able to go and conduct discovery. And, you know, I think we talked about it a couple weeks ago. You know, there's a big difference between what's admissible and what is discoverable, right? And so discovery, you have to give a lot of stuff that may not even come into the case that may potentially be relevant to this case. So, you know, I think Urban wanted to draw a line. Urban obviously doesn't like Brett McMurphy because he wrote the earlier story that caused him to be suspended. But I can't – one, this is – it's so tough to be able to be successful in this claim. But more importantly, I think they want this stuff behind them, and the last thing they want to do is have in-depth discovery between Brett McMurphy's lawyers and Ohio State's
lawyers. So you think they'll back off? He thinks you'll think they'll back off.
Just no doubt.
If they didn't back off, how much, just as a hypothetical, we have almost muddied the rules of journalism, it feels like, at times because of social media and things are said and thrown around, and I think there's more of a lack of accountability in journalism than there's ever been.
Agreed.
Before, because of a lot of those different things. But speaking of a lack of a better word, how about lack of integrity for right. Urban Meyer, considering he's already been challenged on things. So if this were to come because of those two things, it would be for me even harder to say, well, Urban Meyer's already got a kind of a history here, right. So you can connect some dots. And in journalism these days, we're kind of connecting dots more than maybe sometimes saying facts at times. You know, to right. me, that would make it even harder for well, them.
It's a good point, and it really goes to what one of the other elements are. You have to show that your reputation has been damaged.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Well, his could have already been bent.
Right. Well, and I think that could potentially be an argument that you would go to counter it. If you read the actual story, okay, it runs on. Brett McMurphy did do – he interviewed a lot of people. He puts on a fax. What he really says in the story is he kind of says, well, someone said this and someone counters this and they went in to go do it. So I don't believe there was a bright line like, well, we got this person is a pedophile and you've got to go and back it up. Or this person is a convicted felon. And if you had a defamation trial, you'd say, okay, you got the judgment and sentence report where they were convicted. So it's got to be a real bright line. So that was the other thing. And reading the report – it went into really a lot of things. It was really long, and it really wasn't as clear as saying this was the only thing that had happened. So I think it would be really tough to be able to bring it. When I read the story, the thing I thought was unfortunate, it went into issues involving the player's mom.
Right.
The mom lost her job since, and there were some things that not illegal. I don't think somebody could bring an action because it appears that those facts were true. They just struck me as not really being relevant, had nothing to do with the altercation that had taken place at Ohio State. And so I thought that was very unfortunate and, you know, arguably not illegal, not actionable, but I thought should have been out of bounds from a journalistic perspective.
Brett, what would be the difficulties of Urban Ohio State suing McMurphy for false light or invasion of privacy? What is false light?
So false light and invasion of privacy really are just kind of subsets of defamation. They're all what we would call defamation-based torts. And defamation is usually an easier pathway to be successful because you're going to go in and say something is true or is not, right? And so when you get into false light or you get into some of the other things, you know, the elements are slightly different, but they're basically based on the same things, you know, that truth and or falsity as it relates. Like I said, he put so many counterfacts in there that I don't think you could say it was him putting it specifically into, you know, a false light. Really, Urban's not a central component of the story, other than he mentions how he flew to South Florida. And then what the article says is that the mom arguably had cancer, and so they were going to console the mom on cancer. It's sort of insinuated from the story from Brett McMurphy that he was really trying to go back and maybe, although the story never says this, cover up whatever incident happened with the player.
A final thing here, Brett. How often, how much libel, how often does libel get litigated? How often do people win with libel? Because I would think most newspapers, magazines are very fortified with great legal teams, right, over the years, right?
Yeah. It's rarely successfully litigated. If it does take place, it is usually in a context where maybe it's somebody who is not a limited public figure. The much higher standard that you get from actual malice in New York Times v. Sullivan is what really makes it tough. You know, if a local business owner who, you know, you may not have known, but the business was defamed or something they did there came out and it went in reports and nobody fact checked it and went in and it caused your business to go under, that's the type of thing where you would see it being successful. But it happens very rarely. I've seen one or two cases locally that I've ever seen be successful and, you know, run the gamut.
Brett Hastings from the law firm of Brett Hastings. Thanks, buddy. Good to see you.
Take care.
Back in a moment with our community hero and more. Stay with us on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM.
It's an old rock Thursday. Music the way it should be, or at least used to be, on The Frangie Show.
My grandpa, he's 95, and he keeps on dancing. He's still alive. My grandma, she's 92. She loves to dance and sing some too.
Let's head out to Orange Park. Say hello to my pal Joe Ross from the Orange Park Kennel Club. Hello, Joe.
Good afternoon, Frank, and don't ask me. It's on the tip of my tongue, but I'm lost.
You know what? You wouldn't know. Is this Steve Miller? I would have never known. So how about that?
Yeah, I knew they did a song like that that I just didn't. It didn't resonate, but I was praying to God that you weren't going to ask me.
Well, then you're off the hook. All right,
I appreciate that. How you doing?
I'm good, Joe. What's going on, my man?
We got the second chance drawings, and on Friday the Twin Try always gets forced out. Saturday's the ever popular Dime Super. Also, like to remind everybody, no live or simulcast racing Thanksgiving Day. However, we'll come back with a doubleheader on Friday and Saturday next week, Thanksgiving week. We start up our Thanksgiving Marathon Stakes on Monday, and the final takes place on Friday evening. Once again, that Friday, we have a special doubleheader. And on poker side, we're open 10 a.m. to 4 a.m., Sunday to Thursday. Friday and Saturday, we're always open and looking for a great pet. Give our good friend Shirley a call at Grounds as Pets, 388-6034. Wish everybody a happy and safe Thanksgiving.
All right, Joe, you're very kind. Thanks, buddy. Good to hear from you. Take care.
You guys have a great Thanksgiving. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Joe Ross checking in from the Orange Park Kennel Club. Time now for the Community Hero, always brought to you by Center State Bank. With 7 locations in Jacksonville and St. Augustine, you want a terrific bank, Florida's business bank, but also a bank that believes in you and they believe in the Community Heroes. How about that Mandarin Junior quarterback, Carson Beck? People know all about him. He threw 5 touchdown passes to 4 different receivers. Mandarin rolled to a 35-0 victory over DeLand in the first round of the 8A playoffs last week. Mandarin advances to take on Winter Park in round 2. Congratulations to Carson Beck. He is the community hero. The community hero brought to you by our friends at Center State Bank. We're coming up on a break here. I want to get back on time. We go to hour 3. You're going to hear from Jimmy Himes talking SEC football. But I got another kind of spin on SEC football and ACC football and kind of where I think it's going. I think we're at a little bit of a crossroads. A little bit of a crossroads is probably not the right word. But I think we see a trend that could be concerning. Can I give you that? Can
sure.
I give concerning? I think we have a concerning trend in college football. I'll tell you what it is. Let's take a break. That's up next when the 5 o'clock hour commences on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
The Frangie Show on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Here, that means it's time for more football.
Football! Hut.
Football at 5.
5 o'clock somewhere.
On The Frangie Show.
It's an Old Rock Thursday. Music the way it should be, or at least used to be, on The Frangie Show.
This isn't Steve Miller, is it?
No, this is a little band from San Francisco.
You know Steve Miller band from San Francisco, too.
I didn't know that. But this is actually a different band.
This is.
And so, this is actually a band that you would know.
I like your name. Almost picked. In fact, okay. I had several requests. Right. So, again, just to reset this, if you just joined us at Old Rock Thursday, it was my choice today. And so I left it up to social media a little bit. And on their behalf, I'm going to make a $96 donation to the Tom Coughlin J Fund. Well, the Tom Coughlin J Fund tweeted back at me.
Right.
And said, "Don't Stop Believing" by Journey is Kelly Coughlin's choice.
Okay.
So I said, you know what? I got to at least sneak one in.
Yes, you did. And you did it well. By the way, the people that don't like this song thought it was overplayed. The overplayed songs bother you? Overplayed never bothered me.
It doesn't bother me.
It bothers me, but I don't know why. I mean, I was little when this song came out. I think this is a masterful song.
Masterful
I could
song.
Listen to this song five times a day for the rest of my life and never get sick.
The whole overplayed thing never. If the song's too overplayed for you, you don't like the song. I mean, I never thought Piano Man or Don't Stop or Stairway were overplayed. I thought they're great songs.
Why don't people mind seeing movies 500 times?
Correct.
They get mad at overplayed songs.
Yeah. Because I guess
I get mad at overplayed songs. Well, because, but this isn't one of them.
Yeah, because but people get mad at because they think movies, you choose to go to it. Music can hit you on the radio or in the elevator, right? Isn't that the theory?
Well, I'll give you one from my generation. So The Offspring had a song called "Keep 'Em Separated."
Okay.
It came out in summer of 94. And it was awesome. It's a great song. And if I heard it right now driving home, I'd listen to the whole thing and I'd be totally into it. Okay, that summer, it got to the point where after day 50, it was all you'd hear. You'd hear it seven times a day and it was like, okay, enough. This is a good song. It has had a nice run and now it is time for it to go away. So I think there's, at least from my generation, there were songs like that. But Don't Stop Believing, listen to that all the time.
I agree, so.
All right, hey,
what are you doing?
Well, just I want to share. Listen, part of this was to get a little drive going toward Giving
Absolutely.
Back Tuesday. Tom Coughlin J Fund a couple weeks away on the 27th, a couple of Tuesdays away. So, again, I'm going to make a donation here today.
Good job.
For Old Rock Thursday, $96. And I think I want to make sure I have the right information. But I think you can text the word TEAM, T-E-A-M, to 52182, 52182. I'm going to try it. And so I encourage everybody else to try it, too.
Great idea. I'm glad you did it. No question about it. Let's get to some college football. I got theory. I want to bounce it off you gentlemen. Every sport's cyclical. Who's good? Who's not? Who's up? Who's down? We hit this wave of football. I don't know. When do we go to 85 scholarships? 92, 93? Right?
Probably. It's been that way the entire time I've paid attention to it.
Okay. It was 105. You had 105 scholarships through the 70s, early 80s, okay? The NCAA knocked it down to 95, I want to say mid-80s maybe, somewhere in there. So you could have 105 players on scholarship up until the 70s or 80s. 95, and then it finally went down to 85, I want to say 93, 94, 90, somewhere in there, early 90s. And it stuck at 85. And when it went down to, remember, that's down now. That's 20 scholarships down from where it was 20 years earlier. So when it went down to 85, then because it went down to 85, everybody thought there'd be more parity. More good high school teams, more kids going to football camps and clinics, and more everybody's on TV, so everyone's got TV money now, and you can see all these teams play, and there was going to be this widespread parity. You know that. We talked about it throughout. One day, Vanderbilt and Kentucky were going to be able to regularly compete with Alabama and LSU because we were going to have widespread parity, widespread. And we saw some moments of that. Oregon came out of nowhere to be great, right, or to be really good. We saw some schools that had not been elite come out of Boise became really good. Brigham Young had their moments. Florida rose from the ashes. They were never any good. All of a sudden, they're good in the 90s. And whoever thought Miami would win five titles in that stretch? So. Rising from the ashes were these programs that had never been great before, right? I fear that the elite schools have got it so right. A, they've got that great heritage and tradition. Nobody else can be Alabama. B, they are such the in thing to do now that not only do you get your 25, you get the best 25. Now you can oversign because the guys don't make it, right? You sign the other guys. Now you've got additional signing periods to break to spread them out. Now you've got preferred walk-ons. Now you got guys leaving early, which means you go get more of these elite guys. I think what we're having is a shrinking, not a widening, which is what we all thought, a shrinking of the pool of elite teams. I think it's epidemic. I think we are down to about 5 to 8, and I might be reaching. It wasn't like that. Remember, we all thought it would be great and big and big and a far bigger landscape, right? A far wider net. All right, who's really elite now? Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, obviously, are elite, okay? After Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia's in an up cycle.
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma's elite. They're fourth, aren't they? They're probably good call. They're probably the fourth kind of, I agree with you. Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, Oklahoma.
But when's the last time Oklahoma, I'm not disagreeing, but yeah. Just to throw it out there,
yeah.
When was the last time they won the national title?
No, they
it's
did.
Been
so,
like 17
so
years.
So maybe they're not in the elite list. I got you. But I mean Florida's won two titles way more recently, but Oklahoma's more elite now. So,
yeah, I wouldn't put Florida in the list either.
Yeah, so you're saying the list is
Oklahoma
12.
Knocks on the door every year.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in the top six or seven.
I might put LSU above Oklahoma. Yeah. They have a recent title, and they haven't totally fallen off.
But whether Oklahoma or LSU are in or not, the point is it's a small list, man. I mean, it just seemed to me like not that long ago, Ohio State, Michigan, USC, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Texas, Florida, FSU, Miami, Alabama, LSU were all on that list. Didn't it feel – Tennessee was on
take
that
me
list.
Back to, all right, take me back to 1994.
Okay.
I'm just throwing a year out, okay?
Okay. Nebraska won the thing. Miami was great. Florida was great. Tennessee was great. FSU was great. That's just in our region. USC was great. Michigan was great. Notre Dame was great in 93. They were off a little in 94. So 93 Notre Dame was great. But my point is they just ran off 8. Now – Hayes may have, we may have 3, not 4. We have, I mean, truly elite programs. I mean, if you ask me right now who can legitimately win the national title this year, it wasn't that long ago that we'd go into a season saying 10 or 11 teams. Now, obviously, that number gets whittled down as the season goes on. I get that. But we went in thinking there's this many teams. I got to tell you, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State can win a national title. I don't think Oklahoma can. I don't. It's my opinion. I don't think Oklahoma can beat Clemson or Alabama. I mean, I may be wrong, but it's what I think sitting here. Maybe Georgia can beat Alabama. Gosh, could Michigan beat Alabama? Maybe. If everything fell right.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it's so hard when you say Alabama, but if you tell me Clemson, I open up the door a little bit.
Yeah, okay. Okay, fair. That's fair. You're right. So, but good point. Alabama seems to be a world apart. My point is, Brent, have we gotten to the point to where we have shrunk the amount of elite teams we're going to have every year because the elite teams have it going on so well?
It's a really good question. I think it's good evidence, by the way, too, that you presented. So I would say – maybe. I think Alabama has kind of created this because they have pulled away from even the elite
to
become super elite. And the reason I hesitate a little bit is because I was thinking of this actually when the rankings came out on Tuesday. And if you look at the back of the top 25, you know, it's not just UCF people talking. Now you're talking about Utah State and Fresno State and other teams like that. It feels like there's more group of five teams that have actually – kept up with some of the power fives, not on the Clemson, Alabama level, but they've actually invaded some of the second half of these power five conference teams and programs.
It's not just Boise anymore, is
it's
what you're saying.
It's not just that. There's more of them, too. Yeah. So that's why I hesitate. I feel like there's more group of five teams that are now capable of competing with what I would say is 80% of college football, power five teams. But they're still obviously not touching those elite teams. And right now it doesn't look like anybody is.
I think it's never been smaller. And I think it's because of Alabama. Clemson's done an excellent job of becoming a little bit of a nemesis for Alabama, if Alabama has one. You know, Ohio State certainly with Urban Meyer, and we'll see if it continues, because the second that he walks away, I think they fall back. But as long as Urban Meyer is the coach there, they're going to be a contender more years than not. We'll see about Kirby Smart, but, I mean, I think this was a trend coming into the year of how many teams realistically could win it. And we've seen teams ranked high that have fallen off. I was looking at a list of the preseason top 25. It was remarkable how many teams are gone. We talked about Miami, but, I mean, Wisconsin was fourth in the country in the preseason poll. So we've seen teams fall out. We really haven't seen anybody rise in that anybody considers a legitimate threat to win the title, because I don't think anybody considers Notre Dame to be a legitimate threat to win the title.
Yeah, I don't think
most people see them going and losing to Clemson in the semifinal, even if they're able to pull that upset, no chance that they beat Alabama. So I think there is a total lack of parity right now in terms of college football, but I think it is more Nick Saban in Alabama than it is anything else.
And it really is amazing. Here's the funny thing. Go back to when I was a little kid, 60s, 70s, it was Ohio State, Alabama, Notre Dame, Oklahoma. The only teams that were around then that aren't now are Nebraska and USC. Other than that, same teams. Now, FSU and Miami hadn't joined the fray, but in terms of the traditional teams, that's who it was. Isn't that something? That was 50 years ago.
Well, and it's always been a sport that prides itself on the old school not so much the newcomer to the party. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Florida is the most recent first-time national champion. That was in 1996. There hasn't been a school win the title since then that's their first title.
Well, you're right. And a second thought I've got, I got a lot of thoughts on this. Second thought is, having said that, the small school of elite, who can join them? Florida could join them.
Well, that's the part of you kind of mixed the two. Because Florida, Texas, USC, been down.
Yeah, and by the way, those three could read. You're a good point. But there's always going to be some teams down, and it just seems even after two or three are down, there'd still be a group of seven or eight, and now there's a group of two or three. But Florida, Texas, USC could rejoin them. Florida State could rejoin them. Those four for sure.
Georgia's close.
Georgia is close. Georgia has proven they can rejoin them because they're almost there.
And Oklahoma's close.
Right. So Oklahoma, Georgia, LSU, Florida, Texas, USC, Florida State.
Penn State.
Penn State could join them. I'm with you. Michigan, if they're not in it already. About it. Can anybody else get in that group regularly?
The only one I question and wonder, and I know it's kind of laughable at the time, but if Peterson continues to stay out at Washington, can he? I mean, he's been in this thing now. He's at least been in the talk. And this year's disappointing, but he's been in the talk for, I think, 3 years in a row.
Right.
So does that –
got to go a long way to get his ballers, Brent. Yeah. I mean, the reason Washington would have great teams for two or three years – than bad teams for two or three years, because you got to go a long way. I mean, Washington's got to go to California and, frankly, Southern California to get their players. Mm-hmm. The problem with Washington and Oregon, and they can't be good together. Has there ever been a year where they've both been elite? Ever? Never, right? They've never, because they can't, because one of them's getting them, one of them's not. When one of them are not getting them, Colorado might get them. When Colorado won the national title in 1990, they were getting the guys. And Washington was pretty good in that stretch, too. But they were getting the guys the other guys didn't get. See, California feeds not just the California schools. It feeds the Arizona schools. Mm. It feeds Washington and Oregon and Colorado. It feeds all those schools. Utah feeds the California pool, feeds all that group. The people east of the Mississippi have Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Western Ohio. There's a lot of good prospects in those areas now. So, but there's not, you don't have that. And Texas obviously feeds both. But you don't have that.
By the way, add potentially now. This is a pipe dream, at least right now. But I think so is, to be honest with you, it's not too different than a Florida, Texas, and everybody else, even though that's where the players are. But if Frost gets Nebraska going, they join that party?
Of course they could. I forgot.
But again, they have to go a long way for players, too. I mean, that players thing is real there.
Yeah, but they're close enough to Texas that they don't have to go that far. They don't have to go as far as Washington is.
I'd like to see him qualify for a bowl game before we start getting too impressed with Scott Frost in Nebraska. Yeah.
But I think here's where I'm going with all this. If Dan Mullen's the right guy, like it looks like he is, and we don't know yet on the recruiting front. We don't know. But on the coaching front, there's a vibe they give off that they're well coached, nowhere to be. He knows the right things to say. That whole thing he said Saturday about, I told our guys, if you don't think we're going to win the game, stay in the damn locker room. That was great stuff, man. That was right. That was, if you don't think we're going to win the game, stay in the locker room. Well, didn't that resonate? Didn't that resonate with it? Weren't Florida fans, diehards, jumping off the couch when they heard him say that?
Yeah, because he was pissed at the players, just like most of the Florida fans were.
Correct. And he's a good X's and O's guy. He certainly seems to be a good CEO, right? He said all the right things, managed all the right stuff. So I wonder, of the schools that aren't there that could get back in, and I forgot about Nebraska, you're right.
Oh, they're probably distant. Yeah, yeah. Texas A&M's before them, actually.
Okay, well, that's a good point, because here's where I'm going. Of the schools that could, but they've never really been in. They've never been in. They've had up moments, but Texas A&M's never been in that elite. That doesn't mean they haven't had a good year or two, but they've never been in the elite group. Not like Texas has.
They feel like they're building like Clemson.
Well, and the reason they hire Jimbo Fisher is to turn them into Texas, Oklahoma, Florida State. I get it, but they've never been there. They would be a newcomer, not a returning member. So among the possible returning members, the ones I probably feel the best about are probably Florida and Michigan because of their coaches. Lincoln Riley's a wonderful coach. We'll see, though, can he do it year after year, recruit year after year. He's a great offensive mind. Tom Herman's good. I don't know that he's great. I don't know that I think Tom Herman's good. Is he great?
No.
I don't know that he's great. He's good, right? LSU doesn't have the right guy. You're not going to become elite with Ed Orgeron. I don't believe that. So Clay Helton is the wrong guy at USC. USC could return, but not with Clay Helton. They're not. So don't you sense that Florida might be first in line, maybe along with Michigan, to join Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson?
Oh, Georgia's ahead of both.
Well, and you know what? And Georgia fans yelling at me, you're right, Georgia fan. You're way ahead of both because you're almost in it. My bad. Georgia's next in line. Georgia's right there. Georgia's practically in it. So sorry, Georgia fan. I forgot about you. And they do have the right coach. So Georgia's got the right coach, and he's proven it because he's got him right on the cusp. But after that, Florida, Michigan.
And Penn State.
Why do I feel like Penn State is a notch behind Michigan and Ohio State?
They might be.
Do you feel that way?
Yeah, they might.
Maybe a half notch, a little bit of a notch behind them.
But nobody's had to overcome what Penn State has overcome.
I agree.
And look how fast they've been able to do
it. And it's a great foundation. It's a great foundation. I mean, Penn State's a great place. It's a great stadium. There's enough Western Pennsylvania. There's a lot of players in Western Pennsylvania.
Yep.
And Ohio's, what, fourth in terms of recruits every year? It's Florida, California, Texas, Georgia. Ohio's fifth. Georgia's fourth, right? Every list you see. It's Florida, California, Texas, in whatever order.
Louisiana's right in the mix.
It is, isn't it? That's the sixth one. But the point is, yeah, so I just feel like if Mullen's the right guy, that's coming back. Can Tennessee get back? Or are they two? What about Tennessee? Right guy?
If they have the right guy, I think they can be good. I don't think they'll ever be great. To me, what you say about Miami is how I feel about Tennessee.
Make your point. Why is that?
Because they have to win so many road recruiting battles.
Good point.
And I just don't think you can do that. The state of Tennessee does not produce enough football talent to make Tennessee elite. They have to go out into Georgia, in Florida, and I just think in this day and age with all the great programs all over the Southeast,
I hear you.
It's just tough. You're not going to pull in the players. And that's why I struggle to put Florida in there in terms of a lock, because I need to see Dan Mullen produce a top five class. It's not going to happen this year. I think he'll have a pretty good class. But to win national titles, you've got to get into that top five. Now, he may do it. You know, he has a big year, solid recruiting class, good year next year, and then maybe he's in the top five. But Kirby Smart's already shown me he can do that. So it's hard for me to get there with Florida in terms of being definite. I think it will happen, but I can't. To me, it's not a certainty because he has not recruited high enough yet for me to buy in to that degree.
And your point about being my credo, far from the players, it's hard. It's hard when you're far from the players. Tennessee's far from the players. When Tennessee won their national title in 1998, they came from Georgia. That's when they had Jamal Lewis was from Atlanta. Deion Grant was from Atlanta. Cozy Coleman was from Atlanta. These were five-star megastars now, all from the same area in Atlanta. I mean, that's where they got their guys. You know who else is struggling to become – you know who else none of us named? None of us named?
Auburn?
Look at your shirt.
Oh, Notre Dame.
Nobody named Notre Dame. None of us did because they're far from the players too. You know the story I told you. 1993 game of the century. The game of the century we talked about last week. Last year was the 25th anniversary of it, or this year was the 25th anniversary of it. Game of the century. I was at the game. I looked at the roster. Of the 100 or so players on the FSU roster, 85 scholarship and other walk-ons, whatnot, roughly 50-some, 60-some were from Florida. Of the 100 or so players on the Notre Dame roster, one was from Indiana. Anthony Johnson, a fullback who later played for the Panthers. One! So it proves how hard it is. So we'll see.
Well, that being said, though, I mean, you start to say this, and this isn't elite, but, I mean, is this as good as they can do at Notre Dame? But go back to 2012, national championship appearance, 12-1, and they went 9-4, 8-5, but they had a 10-win season in 15, 10-win season in 17. They're undefeated here in 18. I mean, they're knocking on the door. Does that mean they can get in, or are they always going to sit on the outside?
Well, Notre Dame will always be Notre Dame. So they're going to get some players the other guy didn't get. And by the way, we've all said, we've gone around this table and all said if Urban Meyer went there, they'd be elite, right?
Absolutely.
So it's still the coach if you're at the right place, yeah. And Notre Dame can
They've
be
been ranked player. In the top 5, 3, 6, 7, in the last 7 years at one time during the season, right. They've been 5 times ranked in the top 5.
Yeah, that's a lot. Now, they get some benefit of the doubt from some voters, you know, but you're right. I'm still.
And so I just don't know what that, I'm not saying they're in. I agree with you guys probably, but. Can they get over that last hurdle to stay there? Yeah. Once they get there now, if you win a national title, you're going to be there for a bit.
And Notre Dame fan listening now saying, wait a minute, we are undefeated. We are probably headed for 12-0. Before you write us off now, can we acknowledge the 12-0, by the way? I mean, I get that.
And it's a better 12-0 than 2012.
I agree with that. All right, let's take a break. Let's stay on college football, though. How about SEC style when we come back? Jimmy Himes joins me to talk SEC football. That's next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Time now for Jimmy Himes, talking SEC football, brought to you by Underwood Jewelers.
It is time to talk SEC football with my man Jimmy Himes out of Knoxville, Tennessee. How you doing, Jimmy?
Frank, I'm doing great. Hope you are, too.
Well, I am. Now, listen, when I told you I thought Tennessee would beat Kentucky, you fitted me for a straitjacket, okay?
Yes.
So I'm not sure what to do with it now, Jimmy. Should I send it out? Could I sell it, by any chance?
No, I'm wearing it. Although, I thought I got to take it off when I took Florida over South Carolina.
That's right. We kind of shared it. You're exactly right.
That's right.
Good point. Let me start with that Tennessee game. I'm telling you, and you're right there. You know better than I do. But it does feel like they've made progress. I like the hire. I told you that. I do see, and it's incremental progress. I'll give you that. But it feels like progress in Knoxville. Do you feel that way?
Well, I do. But here's the thing, Frank. And look, I've been watching college football for over 40 years. So I understand you should not put too much stock in the game before.
Right.
But I was having trouble doing that because I watched the Tennessee team against Charlotte. They couldn't run. They got manhandled at the line of scrimmage. They got 20 yards on 26 carries. They were very uninspired. They looked horrible. And I could not get that game out of my mind. And I thought, well, if Kentucky can beat Florida and if Kentucky can beat Mississippi State, which has a very good defensive line, and beat Missouri on the road, they're going to beat Tennessee. Well, the Tennessee team that showed up against Kentucky wasn't anything like the Charlotte team, the team that showed up for Charlotte. So that's the thing, though. I don't know what I'm going to get when I go watch them play. So have they made progress? Yes. But if you did it on a graph bar, and you started on September the 1st, it wouldn't be a straight upward line. It would be a jagged line.
Yeah, I get it.
I'm telling you, that game against Charlotte, they were terrible.
Yeah, and you know what? And maybe looking ahead, and sometimes you need your team. You know your team too well, don't you, Jim? You knew that team really well.
And Marquez Callaway, Tennessee wide receiver, said as much. He said, we were looking ahead to Kentucky. Nobody else on the team, coaches or players, would admit it, but he said that. And I thought, okay, well, even if you were, I'm still not sure you're going to beat Kentucky, which beat Florida and Mississippi State at the line of scrimmage. But that Tennessee team that played against Kentucky was a good football team. And the team that beat Auburn, that was a good football team that day. Now, will they be a good football team this Saturday? I don't know. But I do think they are better. I think they've made progress. I can point to a lot of individual players that are better. I can point to units on this team that are better. But they did take a big step back against Charlotte, which just that imprint on my mind led me to pick Kentucky.
What about Kentucky? Kentucky's in a fade now.
Yes.
Were they not as good? Are they out of gas? What's your read?
I think they're out of gas, but I was talking to John Clay, who's covered Kentucky for many, many years, and he told me that after the game. This team's got nothing left in the tank. And that's interesting that would occur. But after they beat Missouri, and they didn't play very well against Missouri. They found a way to win, which impressed me. But he thinks that they don't have much in the tank. There have been a lot of reports that Benny Snell is nicked up a little bit. He's not the back that he was earlier in the year. And here's the other thing, too. Terry Wilson at quarterback, here's what Tennessee did. They said, we're going to stop the run as best we can and make the quarterback beat us throwing the football. He couldn't do it. He did not have a good game. I have felt all along that he might hold them back at some point, and I think he is holding them back right now because they are not a two-dimensional team. They don't throw the ball very well. You can stack up the line of scrimmage. Yeah, you could. Here's another. Here's a stat that's kind of interesting. Kentucky did not have a play in the first half for more than 9 yards. Now think about it. For a whole half, the team didn't get a gain of more than 9 yards. Tennessee said, we're going to stack the line, stop you. If you can throw it and beat us, go for it, and Kentucky couldn't do it.
The big picture question here, Jimmy. This week's awful. Are we messing up college football a little bit? Rivalry week is such a big deal, and it's a great week. We can't watch all the games next weekend. But are we messing it up by having weeks like this nationwide that are this bad?
Well, it certainly isn't very attractive, is it? And here's kind of what's happened. I can't speak to everybody else, but what's happened in the SEC is a lot of these teams in the SEC were taking open dates before their rivalry games. And there were so many open dates, there wasn't much of a TV inventory. So the SEC told these teams you can't do that anymore. Well, there's still not much of a TV inventory, right?
Right.
Because you're playing Citadel and Liberty and Chattanooga and Idaho, et cetera. But that's what's led to that. A lot of these teams wanted open dates before they played their big rivalry game, and now they're playing cupcakes before their rivalry game. So it's kind of almost like a pause during the season because there are not many good matchups this weekend.
Give me a power poll in the league. Alabama 1, I assume Georgia 2, then go ahead. Give me the next 4 or 5 in your mind.
I'm going to go LSU 3, and I'm going to go – this sounds crazy – Florida 4.
Yeah, I think so.
It's hard for me not to take that one. After that, it's kind of rough. I'm not sure. There are a lot of 6-4 kind of teams out there. The next one would probably be. Boy, it's not. You know what? I tell you, the team that I would have up there higher than most people is Missouri. I don't think it's Auburn. I don't know that it's Mississippi State. Their quarterback play has been a little bit iffy. Here's the thing about Missouri. Missouri blew a game to Kentucky and blew a game to South Carolina. They should be 8-2. Their talent suggests they should be 8-2. Their offense says they should be 8-2, if not for blowing a couple of games. I actually think that's a pretty good football team.
Any coaching movement in the league this year? Anybody out? Anybody fired? Anybody leaving? Derek Mason was the discussion point. I think he's fine, I sense. Barry Odom, I sense, is fine. Any movement this year? Is it going to be the same 14 coaches next year, which never happens?
I think it'll be the same 14, and it is very, very rare. But I think Barry Odom's okay. The only concern I'd have at Vanderbilt, what if Vanderbilt loses their last couple of games by 20 points or more?
Right.
Maybe that would get some momentum going. I don't think that'll happen. So I don't think there'll be a change. I do not think there'll be a change.
It's just really interesting, isn't it? Player of the Year is Tua. Who else has caught your attention? Who? What other players have wowed you this year in the league? Anybody in specific, Jimmy?
Other than Tua, I think Josh Allen at Kentucky is an outstanding player. But I'm going to tell you the one that was not on my radar, and maybe that's my fault, Quinnen Williams at Alabama. He is a beast. He's been almost unblockable. I've seen him go against double teams and whip double teams. I thought Raekwon Davis would be Alabama's best defensive lineman. I think he was, in my mind, overshadowing Williams. Williams has had the better year, and I don't even think it's close. So I'm going to put him way up on that list as far as the best players in the league this year. I tell you, a running back that's emerged, too, is Travion Williams at Texas A&M. He now leads the SEC in rushing. He's had some 150-yard games out there. Vanderbilt couldn't tackle him. I think he's had an exceptional year. I'd put him really high on that list.
All right, we'll do our superlatives not next week, but in our final show the week after that, and I'll have you pick your coach of the year, player of the year, offense, defense, the whole bit. So we'll get to that a little bit later on. But in the meantime, let's a few specifics here. Let's get to the games first. Arkansas at Mississippi State, only 3 games this week involving 2 teams. Arkansas and Mississippi State. Jimmy, who do you like here?
Mississippi State. Arkansas gave LSU a little bit of a run in the fourth quarter. LSU led 24-3. I think they kind of relaxed a little bit. Arkansas kind of got back in the game, but they're not very good. I think that Chad Morris will have the same fate as Brett Bielema did his first year at Arkansas. I think he's going 0-8 in the SEC. Give me Mississippi State.
All right, Ole Miss plays at Vanderbilt. The game's at Vanderbilt. This could be a close one. Who do you like here?
I think it's going to be a close one. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. Neither defense is very good. I'm going to go Vanderbilt. I think it'll be a high-scoring game. I think they'll get to 40 points to win it. I tell you what, Vanderbilt's got a really good running back named Keyshawn Vaughn. He's a transfer from Illinois. He had 180-something yards last week. He's a really good player, but I just think Vanderbilt will outscore Ole Miss.
He's really good, by the way. I agree with you. What a nice back. And finally, your game in Knoxville. It's the CBS game. Missouri plays at Tennessee. I think this is two improving teams. I really do. Missouri started 0-4 in the league, but they're so much better than that. They're a better team than that. We've seen it now. I think Tennessee, I said it earlier, is upwardly mobile. Who wins this game along the Tennessee River?
I think it's going to be Missouri. It's interesting. The offensive coordinator at Missouri is Derek Dooley, the former Tennessee head coach. I've been requesting interviews with him for months and can't get one. But he's talked to the Missouri media. He did tell them a while back. He mentioned some of the mistakes he made at Tennessee. And he said that experience humbled him a great deal. But what's interesting about Missouri, they got really good balance. And Locke is a very good quarterback. His numbers aren't as good as a year ago. He had 44 touchdown passes last year. I think he's got about 20 this year. Their offense has been amazingly balanced. They've got 21 rushing touchdowns, 21 passing touchdowns at Missouri. And their defense against the run's a lot better. They give up a little over 130 yards. I just think that and by the way, get a load of this. This is hard to imagine. The last 2 years, Missouri has averaged 43 points, 425 rushing yards, and 700 total yards per game against Tennessee.
Wow.
Tennessee hadn't come close to stopping them. Tennessee will do a better job than those numbers, but I think Missouri beats Tennessee.
Final question, Jimmy, and we'll talk about this much more next week and particularly the week after since we know Georgia and Alabama are in the game. I think we expect them to win out. I think Alabama will beat Auburn and Georgia will beat Georgia Tech, so we think we've got 12-0 facing 11-1. If it's that, the general consensus is Alabama can lose and still get in. In your opinion, A, is that true? And B, if Georgia loses, does it have any chance to get to the playoffs with two losses?
Georgia has no chance to get to the playoff with two losses. There are too many other teams out there that will have one loss that will go ahead of them. In fact, if an Ohio State wins out with one loss, I think they would go ahead of them. So I don't think there's any way Georgia gets in. I do think Alabama with one loss can get in. With the resume they built up, with what they have done, it's almost like a few years ago, Frank, when Tiger Woods was ranked number one in the world.
Right.
He had such a great lead over everybody else, it didn't matter what he did for the next 8 weeks. I think Alabama's got a big lead over everybody else, and I think that even if they lost to Georgia with one loss, they could get in. Because I think the resume would still be better than Michigan. I think it would be better than any one-loss team out there. And there will be a one-loss team that's in this playoff. So I'm going to say Alabama, yes, if it loses to Georgia, but Georgia, no chance if it loses to Alabama.
All right, dull week this week. We went through the games. Huge week next week. Everybody plays a rival. We'll track it with Jimmy Himes from Knoxville, Tennessee. Jimmy, thanks, buddy.
Okay, thanks, Frank. Appreciate it.
My man Jimmy Himes checking in, talking SEC football. I hate this week, by the way. Did they mess it up? I asked Jimmy this. Do they have it right, Hayes, where all the rivalry week stuff is next week? And this week's as dull as it is. Should they mix them up a little bit?
I don't think so. I think it's
just stomach this week.
I think you got to just stomach this week. Now, if the SEC ever goes to 9 conference games, then that would certainly spice things up. And maybe if the playoff does expand to 8, and if the playoff expands to 8, the SEC, if ever a team could get 3, the SEC will be the first conference that does it. So they may be a little more apt. They exist in a system now where there's 4, and they routinely get 2. I do wonder if it went to 8, if they would feel like they might be able to get 3 if it was Power 5 conferences, 3 wild cards. Could they get a situation where the SEC, more years than not, was getting 3 into the 8? So that would, in my opinion, enable them to go to the 9th conference game. But short of going to the 9th conference game and short of the playoff expanding to 8, I think these weeks are here. And like I said, I'm excited about Saturday. I might be totally in the minority on it, but I think there is something nice to have a Saturday that is drama-free when you've gone through your conference schedule and all 8 games have pretty much been a grind, ups and downs. It's nice to know that you're going to get that game where you can see some of the younger players get significant reps. You can see 7 or 8 touchdowns scored, and you can feel good about your team. So, I like the Idaho kind of games.
This is a big big game for the scoreboard, I think, for Dan Mullen. Because
yeah, there's some truth to that.
I think, you know, the point spreads in this weekend are crazy, right? Like Alabama's right. 52 and Georgia's like 41 over UMass and Florida, I think, is a 40-point favorite. But this is a game where you want to see 60s. This is the game where Hayes has said countless times over the last couple of years they've been impacted a bit in the rankings because of the hurricane games that have been lost. This is one you go win 66-7 or whatever it is, and you inflate some of those numbers, and on the recruiting trail,
right.
You didn't just jump 60 spots, you jumped 75 spots in total offense or in rushing or whatever it might
yeah,
be.
I think that's true.
So I think there is some value in this game for Dan Mullen, bigger than anything, and for the Florida program overall rather than any one player on Saturday.
Yeah, no, and here's the thing, too. You know who this game is really for? It's for to your point, to the freaking diehards, because you know what they are? And I was one for the longer. You may still be in there. I might have peeked my head out a little bit and snuck out because I was this guy forever. Depth chart guy. You depth chart guy?
Yeah.
I like depth charts too, but back in the day, I could tell you when Richard Starwiski was the third team left guard. Remember Richard Starwiski? Greatest thing ever, Richard Starwiski? Greatest ever. Do you remember him?
I do.
Richard Starwiski. He was a 6 feet, 315-pound guard. 6 feet tall is all he was, okay? Good lad. He was the shortest guy on the offensive line. You know the story? Okay. Anyway, they were playing Rutgers or one of those bad teams. They used to start the season with something. And it was, I'm telling you, it was 700 degrees.
This wasn't the tie to Rutgers, was it?
No. That was okay. No, it wasn't. It might not have been Rutgers. It was a game they won easy.
Okay, guys.
Richard Starwood, and it was hot. Now, understand, he was 6 feet, 315, all right? Not 6'5", 315, 6 feet.
A bowling ball.
He's a bowling ball. Offensive guard. Pretty good player. He starts jogging toward the sideline, okay? And then he stops. Then he takes a few more steps, and then he stops. You knew it was coming. We were just hoping he got there, okay? He got to right about the numbers, took a knee, pulled the helmet up by the face mask, and I'm telling you, it was one of the greatest projectile barfs in the history of the world. You've never seen – I mean, it was flying, bro. It was all yellow and gold and I mean, and you could, no matter where you sat, you could see it. It wasn't like you couldn't see it. I mean, it was horizontal. And I remember thinking, God bless you, Richard Starwiski. He'll always be famous for that. The guy that barfed like you can't imagine. I mean, he covered up the number, Brent. Okay,
what do you do?
I don't mean a little bit.
Does the grounds crew put dry dirt on there or what? I mean,
well,
that happened.
I don't know. They did go up and clean it up. They stopped the game. They stopped the game enough to clean up the vomit. There's nothing greater than cleaning up vomit in the middle of a game. It was phenomenal. But I was depth chart guy. I was like you. I want to see backup after backup after backup play.
I want to see a guy throw up.
And Richard Starwiski was tremendous. But back to the question. Hayes and I have been talking about this. Brent, I guess we've – I don't know if you and I have talked about it as well because Hayes and I do it on the TV show, TV side as well. Would you play Emory Jones this game? He's got 2 he can play and there's 3 games left. I've never wavered from this. I would play him half this game. I would play him and play him and play him and play him. And then I'd worry about the rest. I said all along I wouldn't worry about the red shirt. I'm almost at a point now that I'd be thinking a little bit about the red shirt. I wouldn't be as locked in as you are. I wouldn't be as quiet, screw it, as you are. I was that way 3 weeks ago. I didn't care about the red shirt. Now that you're this close, but this wouldn't be the game I sacrificed. I'm not sacrificing the game where I know he can get 30 plays. I'm not sacrificing that game. Because that nothing, I'm telling you, assuming Felipe Franks is not going to get hurt, nothing in that FSU game is going to advance him like that Idaho game will. Nothing. Idaho, he's going to play and play and play and play and play. I'm guessing he doesn't play against FSU. I mean, that's a hard game. I don't care how bad FSU is. When those two teams get together, I'm telling you, in 1979, okay, when you two knuckleheads were two, mm-hmm. right, I went to Florida was 0-10-1. Okay?
I had a bowl. Okay.
Did you have a bowl? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, I had a bowl too. Something else. Okay, so I was okay. Okay. All right, so we're clear.
Hey, did you yet have that bowl?
Okay.
Or what?
So we're clear. Right? I was a junior in college, right? So, but I'm telling you. So, and I mean, we were terrible. You had to find a way to get
save
through the game.
That. That might have been one of Frenchie's
okay.
best in recent
okay,
weeks.
Okay, so, so you had to find a way to get through games. Florida's 0-10-1. FSU's, that was back when we played 11 game season. They're 10-0. It's 10-0 versus 0-10-1. The game was a touchdown difference late. Okay? because the rivalry games are kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any doubt in y'all's mind that FSU hangs around with Florida and maybe it could possibly beat them?
Well,
is there any doubt in your mind?
A little doubt, but I get your point. I could see. It wouldn't shock me if they won the game because it's a rivalry game, and I don't know if Florida's that good. But to get back to your Emory Jones point, I think the question we can't answer is how much could he be used in packages against Florida State? And I understand, okay, you don't think he's going to play, not going to play 15 plays. But those three plays or those five plays that he plays to help you beat Florida State, in my estimation, are way more important than 30 plays against Idaho. And so if Mullen believes that's part of his plan to beat them, that would work against Florida State, and it comes at a handful of plays, well, that's way more important. And by the way, I believe the most important game for Emory Jones is not Idaho-Florida State. It's the bowl game, because by then he would have had 15 practices. You can utilize him more. You can get him more comfortable, and then you do something in the bowl game where he might even play half of that thing. Heck, he might start it depending on how Franks is playing. So I think actually that's his most important game. So you start backwards from there. If you think the bowl game, like me, is the most important game for Emory Jones, then that's the one. And now the most important win on their schedule is Florida State. So if five plays help you beat Florida State from Emory Jones, that's way more important than playing two quarters against Idaho, in my opinion.
They're not going to need five plays from Emory Jones to beat Florida State, in my opinion, because if they need that package, they're more lethal with Kadarius Toney running it. If all the Dan Mullen's done a lot of great things. If I could pinpoint one mistake he's made, it was the bye week putting the package in for Emory Jones. That package should have been Kadarius Toney's package. He's a far better runner than Emory Jones, and he's got every bit the arm that Emory Jones has. To me, I think I would play Emory Jones half of the Idaho game on Saturday. I would, if you want to use the package, the special package, use it for Toney against Florida State. That's what I'd love to see. I'd love to see Kadarius Toney get eight direct snaps against Florida State and love to see how that would work out. And then in the bowl game, I would play Emory Jones. Again, if he gives you – it's got to be a carrot at the end. I mean, you've got to tell Emory Jones after the regular season's over, you know, look, this is your opportunity in these 15 practices. Go out and earn some real reps in the bowl game. Not, you know, we're going to bring you in and run a package. I mean, dazzle us, and we might give you half the bowl game. Particularly if it's, you know, if it isn't a high profile game where you are in the Fiesta Bowl against a UCF in a game that you pretty much have got to win, that's critical to win. I think Emory Jones, it may be, you know, Idaho bowl game fine, but in terms of this special package, that needs to be Kadarius Toney.
Well, and that's why he's probably not playing. If you're correct, and you might be, that's why he's not playing against FSU. By the way, here's one more reason why it should be Kadarius Toney, not Emory Jones, for that package. Not because he's just a better runner. He's been playing. I mean, Emory Jones might fumble a snap. Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw he fumbled an option pitch in one of his three plays against Georgia. Let him fumble the option pitch against the Vandals, not against the Noles. So I would play him this week.
You just want entertainment on Saturday.
I do.
I don't care about the package. You just want a little entertainment.
I need 78-2. I'm with my man Carlyon here.
You're okay? Tired of watching Franks play.
I am.
And you want to see something different.
I am.
Let
me ask you. Let me tell you the difference between you and me, okay, with your little Notre Dame shirt on, okay? Let me tell you your Saturday. You'll wake up. You'll squeeze in nine holes of golf. You'll have some oatmeal. You'll come back. You'll go to seven 12U baseball games. You'll go to
softball this week.
You'll go to nine. I'm not done. You'll go to nine 12U softball games. Okay. You'll go hit golf balls in between. You'll take the kids to that batting cage thing, and you'll hit some batting cage in between. You'll go home.
They've been ripping.
You'll tolerate your family indoors for a while, but you won't like it very much. Okay. You'll go to work. You'll do 17 packages on TV. You'll anchor the 6, the 7, the 8, the 9, the 10, the 11, the 1, and the 2. Okay. You'll leave at 2. You'll sleep for an hour, and then you'll get down to the Jaguar Stadium. That's your Saturday. Okay. I'm going to watch the game.
I'm out of here. See you.
Okay. I'm watching the game. Okay. That's what I'm doing. So I'm watching Emory Jones. Okay. Is that his day?
I think you're close.
I'm pretty much his day. Yeah. And he'll carry a camera the whole time. He'll shoot everything. He'll be there shooting everything.
My boombox.
Yeah, boombox. Let's take a break. We've got hour three upcoming. You're going to hear again from Bill Hillgrove. We're going to re-rack that for you. The terrific play-by-play voice of the Pittsburgh Steelers. That when we launch Hour 3. By the way, I do want to remind you, we'll also hear from our friend Tony Smith. Tony on the call for Bulls football tonight, as a matter of fact. Bulls versus Godby. Game starts at 7 o'clock right here on 92.5 FM. You'll hear from my man Tony Smith tonight. He will check in, then he'll be on the call for that game, big playoff game for the Bulls Bulldogs. Back in a moment. This is 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
The Frankie Show on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
It's an old rock Thursday. Music the way it should be, or at least used to be, on The Frankie Show.
You know what I'm doing right now? Googling the latest Steve Miller tour. Because he tours about 9 times a year.
Yeah.
Okay?
There's no farewell tour.
No,
Steve.
No.
He's
not,
still going.
I will tell you this. I went to the Eagles farewell tour years ago. Then went to the next Eagles farewell tour. When I went to the third Eagles farewell tour, which really was because we lost Glenn Frey shortly thereafter. If you ever been to an Eagles show?
No.
I've been to a bunch of Eagles concerts. And what they do is, you know, with a big band like that, there's no opening band. They just come out and play. The instruments are out there, and the arena's packed. And the band members are all there. I mean, including Timothy B. Schmidt and Joe Walsh. I mean, and all the band. They all go to their instruments, but it's dark. And then the two spotlights are on either side of the stage, and Fry and Henley walk around. The place goes crazy. You know, Fry and Henley walk around. Opposite sides, they go to their mics. And the last time Fry goes, the last time I saw him, they turned the lights on. He goes, "Thank you for coming. Welcome to our farewell tour. Yes, again." Which is awesome. It was his third one.
Yeah.
It was the third, and God rest his soul. I was a big Glenn Frey fan, but we lost him after that. Hey, earlier in the program, we got to catch up with the play-by-play voice of the Pittsburgh Steelers, the venerable Bill Hillgrove, talking Steelers and a whole lot more. It is a pleasure now to welcome in the longtime voice of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Bill Hillgrove, who joins us now. Bill, what a pleasure to have you on. How are you, man?
Well, pleasure's all mine, and my team is getting better, and that's a good sign. This stench that was September has disappeared.
Yeah, I hear you. Hey, what's the key? What's the key to them playing so much better? Obviously, James Conner's played at a great level, and the defense has improved, but nobody knows this team like you do. Why do you think they've played so much better?
I really think it goes back to training camp when Ben never threw a meaningful pass to Antonio Brown. And so they didn't, you know, start to reestablish their chemistry till the season started. And it took a while. And once that happened, then everything else fell into place. Juju Smith-Schuster, I call him Hines Ward Jr. He not only is very effective going down the field and catching the ball, but also a pretty physical blocker. And I think those two things, a healthy Vance McDonald at tight end, has certainly helped. And, you know, this O-line, it's pretty special. It's a lot of pedigree there, and I know we've missed Marcus Gilbert. I think he has a chance to play Sunday at right tackle, but Matt Filer came in, and, you know, that line never skipped a beat. Ben is really appreciative of their presence because he's only been sacked 12 times.
Bill, thanks for joining us. This is Brent Martineau. They're an interesting team sometimes. Of course, the Le'Veon Bell stuff. But even going back to last year, last couple of years, there's some drama at times. It reminded me of the Giants, you know, even when they were good, or the Cowboys when they were good, that they could play through that stuff. On Sunday for those 3 hours, all that stuff really did not matter. How have they remained so focused, and how much does Mike Tomlin deserve credit for that?
Well, he deserves a lot of credit. He knew that they were below the line in September, and he knew that certain pieces weren't available that are now. And I think he trusted Keith Butler to do a good job getting that defense organized. And now they are. I mean, as I heard was that your quarterback with that quote I just heard a few minutes ago, saying that, you know, they do bring a lot of pressure. Cam Hayward and Stephon Tuitt are really, you know, they're Pro Bowl players. And Javon Hargrave has emerged as a nose tackle. And you combine that with their linebackers and the speed that they have, it's been pretty effective. And, you know, when that happens, it takes the pressure off the back end. And Joe Hayden is a good leader. Mike Hilton is a great slot cornerback. You know, Morgan Burnett is a good guy on tight end. So, you know, it's all coming together. And knock on wood, they're staying relatively healthy.
Hey, Bill, this is Hayes Carlion. What kind of strides has T.J. Watt made this season for the Steelers?
Well, they flip-flopped sides, he and Dupree, and now he's coming from the left side, which is the quarterback's open side. And, you know, he's got a variety of moves. I think if, to be fair, to compare him to Bud Dupree, Bud is, you know, a flamethrower. He's got to go on the outside shoulder of that left tackle. But TJ, he can make moves up and under, rip, and all that other jargon that is used mostly by players. And so his versatility in that regard has really been a great presence. You know, he's relentless. He doesn't stop till he gets to the quarterback.
Bill Hillgrove with us, the voice of the Steelers. All right, Bill, last year, obviously Jacksonville had some success up there, won two times against Pittsburgh, including in the playoffs. What's the feeling about this Jaguars team among Steeler folks?
Well, I think, you know, they're taking the mindset that it's the next game on the schedule. It's a conference game, so it's important. And, you know, they're just going to try to stick to their knitting. It's been a good formula ever since they started this win streak when October arrived. And if you look at Tomlin's history, his November especially and December teams have a great winning percentage. So that's the way they're looking at it.
Bill, this franchise has been so good, obviously, for so long, but this rendition of them has been so good, and it feels so good. But you look back, and they haven't been in the Super Bowl since 2010, which is crazy to think about with the success and the teams they've had. Obviously, Patriots have been in the way. Other teams have been in the way, like the Jags last year. But do they feel like the window – I mean, this team, this collection, I mean, that window only stays open so long. And, yeah, you can rebuild it with young players like Connor and Watt, but – is there a pressure on them each and every year? Do you feel it there that builds to go get it done?
I really think Ben is cognizant of that. You know, he knows that his window is closing. But that having been said, the best quarterbacks, and you look at any great quarterback, they play their best ball after the age of 30. And he's in that period of time right now. And you can just see, you can feel it. The game is slow for him. You know, he just rarely makes a mental mistake and rarely does he move the wrong way in the pocket, and it's an uncanny ability. And, yeah, that window's going to close because he's growing long of tooth, as they say. And so is Antonio Brown. You know, I mean, he's now on the other side of being a veteran. And, you know, they realize that this possibility is there for them. So, you know, the way the current situation in the NFL, you got to win your division, and that's their focus right now. Win the division and then worry about all the other things later on. As Mike Tomlin likes to say, the road along this journey gets narrower the more you get into December. And so that's the approach they're taking. I think it's a good one.
Bill, you mentioned Vance McDonald being back and healthy. He and Jesse James have really combined to put up some great numbers, 740 yards, roughly four touchdowns. What makes them stand out? I know they don't get a ton of credit because of Antonio and Juju, but what makes them a special duo, and what kind of success do you think they can have against a Jaguar defense that really struggled to cover the tight end last week in Indianapolis?
Yeah, I think to make a distinction between them, Vance is much more physical than Jesse, a better blocker, and you know he's a load. He's tough to bring down once he gets the ball. If you saw the stiff arm against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on the 75-yard touchdown pass, it was a plant. Jesse is more of a flex tight end, more of a receiver type. And he is 6'7", so he's a nice, big, inviting target for Ben. And I think it's been a great duo. And I think, you know, since Heath Miller retired, they've had trouble manning up that position because, you know, in his prime, Heath was a great blocker and a great receiver. Very few tight ends can combine those two things. So it's a good, positive situation.
Bill Hillgrove with us, the voice of the Steelers. Bill, the Le'Veon Bill thing is behind them now. It certainly seems like the Steelers have moved on without missing a beat, which is amazing to lose a player that good, have him never play for you, and not stumble at all. Am I reading that right? That's behind them, and people aren't worried about it.
Yeah, and give them credit. They didn't make it a point of focus. They focused on who was there,
yeah.
And that was Tomlin's dictation. But, you know, when it went on and on, and the, you know, the saga continued, it was pretty apparent to his teammates that his hand was not in the pile. And so had he come back, it would have been tough. He might have gotten a few lookout blocks, look out.
Yeah, yeah. I think he would have gotten a lot of – it seemed like he was getting a lot of lookout blocked if he'd have come back.
Yeah, you don't want that situation. Obviously, Bill, down here, no love loss for the Pittsburgh Steelers, but I do think it's hard not to appreciate and love the story of James Conner and what he's been able to do. How much have you been able to talk to him? Can you give us a little insight on what kind of guy he is? He's obviously been a tremendous player for them this year.
I sure can. I was privileged because he played at Pitt to get to know his family. And he's been on my boat a couple of times at Conneaut Lake, which is a couple of hours north of Pittsburgh. He's yes, sir, no, sir, thank you, please. When he was having his chemo, he was more concerned about the other patients at the Hillman Center than his own situation. And that's the kind of a kid he is. As soon as he took his last treatment, he went out to the driveway, grabbed a basketball, and did a slam dunk in celebration. I mean, the guy is, he's a beast. I think he dishes out as much punishment as he receives. You watch, he's got a mighty stiff arm. And he's quick and he's fast and he's in the best shape of his life. So it's a great story. I keep telling James, if they make a movie, can you make sure I get a cameo?
On that boat.
On the boat, like. That's right.
And to take it one step further, I think Marquise Pouncey hit the nail on the head when he said James would not have been a third-round pick had it been, not been for cancer. He would have been a first-round pick, and he's looking like it right now.
It's funny you mentioned that because I was going to ask you about Marquise. You know, we cover the Gators here very closely, and he was a big part of two national title teams at Florida. But what kind of legacy is he now in a position to perhaps leave with the Steelers, who have had so many excellent offensive linemen in their storied history? But where is Marquise in terms of maybe where he might be down the line if he's able to give Pittsburgh, you know, two or three more great years?
He's picked up where the previous tight end left off, and center Dermonti Dawson, who's in the he's in Canton, and I think Marquise is on his way. He's athletic, the Steelers pull the center. Most teams can't do that, and with David DeCastro's ability to also block on the move, they can be devastating. So it's been a great legacy, and he won't let anybody near Ben when. When Eric Reed had that illegal hit on Ben, I didn't think he should have been thrown out of the game, but Pouncey was the first man on the scene, and he was letting Reed know that that was not appreciated. And I think when you have that sort of thing, football's the ultimate team sport, and if everybody cares about one another, you're probably, based on that, going to win some games.
Well, Bill, I know you do Pitt football and I think basketball as well. I just want to let you know you may want to come down this week with your boat so then you can go on it again like in January potentially, because could be Tax Slayer Gator Bowl.
Wouldn't that end up there?
That'd be
yeah. And if we play golf, I'll only have time for 9.
Well, we can certainly manage that.
Yeah, we can fit that in. Hey, Bill, are you surprised, by the way, that Pitt's this good, 5-1 in the league and probably going to win that Coastal? Did that surprise you guys up there?
Well, having watched the beginning of the season and the blowout losses to Penn State and UCF, I had my doubts. And a really bad loss at North Carolina, everybody had their doubts. But Pat Narduzzi just, kept his eye on the target. And this team is getting better. Taysir Mack, the receiver, is healthier, so their passing game is starting to come around. And Lord knows they can run the football. So I think it's, it augurs well. They would love a shot at Clemson, but man, he keeps them focused on the next game. They got to get by Wake, and then you worry about Miami and Clemson, and you take them one at a time because that's the only way you can play them.
Bill Hillgrove, the terrific play-by-play voice of the Steelers, also calls Pitt games. Great to have him on the program here on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. Bill, thanks so much for taking the time. Look forward to seeing you on Sunday.
Thanks, guys. Looking forward to it.
You know how you know Bill's an old schooler? It augurs well. It doesn't bode well. There's nothing. We used to have a guy named Raul George who worked on the desk at the Times Union, God rest his soul. And Raul was there he was an old timer now, even when I was just a kid. And he wouldn't say it bodes well for you. He said it augurs well. Never heard that one before, did you?
I haven't.
Bill kind of snuck that one in on you, I think.
Yeah, I think if Bill dropped that one on his boat, it'd be even cooler.
It's got the boat.
That's awesome.
That is
taking
terrific.
People out on his boat.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we've got more to do. Let's talk about high school football a little bit. Hayes, you know it very well. Tony Smith will check in. He is live, about ready to call Bowles versus a very good Tallahassee Godby team. You'll hear that right here on 92.5 FM at 7 o'clock. Back in a moment. This is 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's an old rock Thursday. Music the way it should be, or at least used to be, on The Frangie Show.
Hey, do you want to remind you, we were talking some college football a minute ago. Be sure to check out the little podcast that Hicken and I do, All Things Gators podcast. Dan and I do it. You can see it on 1010XL.com under podcast. Go to 1010XL B-side or in iTunes. Search for All Things Gators. A lot of fun. Dan and I have a lot of fun. We do that every Monday morning, so check it out. Gibby, got some baseball news for us?
Well, I haven't seen an official report, but if you've got the MLB At-Bat app, it's already told you that Christian Yelich is winning the NL MVP.
Very, very fitting. 36 bombs and 110 ribs. Hazy hit 326. Very good defensive outfielder. Boy, you think that was I don't even know what they gave the Marlins. How good was that trade? Christian Yelich, what a good player he's become.
Yeah, really, and it'd be interesting to see where he goes from here, how he follows it up. But what do you see? Do you see the Brewers with some staying power?
I do, because they play in that little bandbox. They're going to hit a lot of home runs. They're a slow-pitch softball team. They're going to out-bomb you. Yeah, I think they can hit. I think if you can hit. The problem is it's a brutally tough division. The Cubs are always going to be good, and the Cardinals are always going to be good. So those three teams, and look, the Pirates are 3-4 games over every year these days. So I mean, it's a hard division. There's the only really bad franchise in the division are the Reds. And again, the Pirates aren't as good as the other teams, but I mean, it's four good franchises of the five teams. That's hard. And so, yeah, I think they're pretty good. I really like Yelich. And I think Craig Counsell's done a good job with them. He's a player's manager. I mean, he's really a player's manager. He was a guy. Counsell was a guy, Hayes, that was an okay. Do you remember him with the Marlins at all? Second baseman. He was an
scrappy.
Okay. Scrappy. He understood the game, had to play the game hard, had to take, I don't want to say shortcuts, long cuts really, but had to do things to make it work. Those guys are the best managers. Guys that were really good players, that were super skilled and super talented, don't become good managers because it came too easy for them. Think about that. Think of all the managers, guys to whom it came easy, in baseball particularly, and maybe it's true in some other sports, I don't know. But in baseball for sure, guys to whom it came very easily are not great managers. They don't understand the struggles of the everyday guy. Counsell understands the struggles. He's a really good guy, they say. Yeah, I think they do have some staying power. I really do. I think, but Yelich, what a good player Yelich.
He got 29 of 30 votes.
Yeah, I would have voted for him. Would you?
Absolutely.
There was some talk about Baez. Would you have voted, Gibby, would you have voted for Baez?
I would not have. I would have voted Yelich, but I can
I
see.
I said that a month and a half ago, I would have voted Yelich.
I could see the argument for Baez because he had really a good year for the Cubs, but down the stretch, there was nobody better in the National League than Yelich.
Yeah, he got hot. He got really hot. What were Baez's numbers, Gibb? Do you have those?
I'll look at them real quick.
Baez had a great year. And look, I wouldn't have minded Baez winning. He's a Jacksonville guy. I mean, he's a guy that was here from age 14 till. Got out of high school. He lived here. Did you ever see him play in person? Did you ever cover him? Or
I did a story on him. His numbers this year: 290 average, 34 home runs, 111 RBIs. I did a story on him right before the draft, and it was enjoyable to meet him. I never really got a chance to see him play, but. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, he's obviously been phenomenal.
Lamb told me a story, Frank, on the baseball podcast, which we got to get you on.
I'd love to. By the way, Taylor Dahl and Gibby do a terrific baseball podcast. You ought to check that out on 1010XL.com as well. But go ahead, Gibby.
Appreciate that. Yeah, we had Lamb on a few weeks ago, and he said that he just drove down to Arlington Country Day because it's close by to where he lives. When Baez was around, and he said the BP that Javier Baez took was just unbelievable. And he said, Dave's seen a lot of guys, right? And he saw Chipper, and he said Chipper Jones never had BP like Javier Baez did.
I believe it. Gibby, I'll tell you a story. We had a really good Warriors team one year, and I was involved with them. I mean, it was a good team. We had a really good team. And we play, you play in all these travel tournaments. Before I was involved with walk-off and stuff that's not travel, I was involved in the travel circuit, just coaching kids, helping kids get scholarships. And our coaches, I've kind of put together the core of coaches. We played in one, it wasn't a travel tournament that weekend, so we played one local tournament. we were probably the better team. We were a team. We were probably a little undermatched in the tournament, but so we played a game, a team of mostly, I want to say, ninth graders. Our kids were all seniors in high school, going to college, some were first year college players. So obviously we were going to win the game easily, and their coach wanted them to play because there were a few 10th graders, mostly 9th graders, but they were playing against older kids, and it helped them. It obviously helps them develop. We just wanted to get some innings for our pitchers playing, I think it was at Paxson. They were playing at Paxson High School. It was a local tournament. And they had a guy, that is three-hole guy. You could tell he was Latin American. He's hitting bombs. I mean, I think we beat them. I'm not exaggerating here. I think we beat them 15-4. He might have hit three home runs.
Oh wow!
So I'm saying, who's that guy? They said you'll know that name. His name's Javier Baez. He's in the ninth grade. Wait till you hear that name. I'm thinking, yeah, I will follow this guy. And then hitting bombs in the ninth grade.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Against a good 18-year team. And I remember, certainly to support David's story that he told to Gibby. But I would have voted Yelich. I think Yelich was the better of the two players.
What kind of contract will Baez get? He hasn't gotten paid yet.
Yeah, I don't think so. In that market, he'll get. And I don't know where his status is. But here's the thing, Hayes. Addison Russell is probably not coming back. We'll get to Tony Smith in a minute because Tony knows a thing or two about baseball. I think if Addison Russell doesn't come back, and it doesn't look like he's going to, and Baez becomes their full time shortstop. Shortstops get paid more than a second baseman. It's not just offense. If Javier Baez becomes the Cubs shortstop, and how old is he? 25?
He's 25.
It's okay.
He'll be 26 in December.
Okay. If Javier Baez has 8 or 9 years like this while playing shortstop, that's epic. I said this before. If steroids notwithstanding, if Alex Rodriguez had never left shortstop, he moved to third because he went to the Yankees because that's the only team that would take on his contract. They already had a guy named Derek Jeter, so A-Rod became a third baseman. That's the only reason he went to third. He was a shortstop with both the Mariners and the Rangers. If he had stayed at shortstop and put up the numbers, some might call him the greatest player of all time. So Baez moving from second to short is a big deal.
Baez made, it says here, $657,000 this past year, and now in 2019 it says ARB 1, so explain that to me. Arbitration.
Well, if he's in his first year of arbitration, then based on the year he had, he's going to make $2.5 million, $3 million.
Really?
Well, you can only jump so much in arbitration.
Yeah.
Maybe it's $4 million.
So he's still a pretty decent ways away from a huge.
But what will happen is he'll turn in a sheet. He'll say we want $8 million. The Cubs will say we want to pay you $4 million, and the arbitrator will decide. If you don't offer a guy arbitration, you lose him. So he's arbitration eligible, must be the first time through. And that's how that works. He turns in a sheet, his agent. The Cubs turn in a sheet, and then the arbitrator decides where they go.
So how long does he have to play until he gets the big money?
Well, I don't know his contract deal.
It just says ARB 1, ARB 2, ARB 3 in 2021.
Then he's probably then probably 2021. That's probably how long it'll be. Now, if he keeps getting arbitration, now they can tear it up and they can sign him to a new deal anytime.
Oh, okay.
So they don't have to wait. This isn't football. You got to wait it out.
I guess.
Tony Smith joins us now. He is on the road in Tallahassee. Hey, Tony.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Tony, we'll get to high school football in a minute. Would you have voted for Yelich over Baez?
Yes. I would have.
He got 29 of the 30 votes. I would have, too. Amazing season he had. I was just telling Hayes, I don't know if you were able to hear, if Javier Baez goes to shortstop, which it looks like he will with Addison Russell not coming back, and stays there for 10 years or 8 years or whatever it is, and puts up epic numbers, that's iconic, Tony. I mean, that's historic if a shortstop puts up those kind of numbers.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah, it would be crazy shortstop numbers. And it's funny, too, Frank, you know, a guy like Baez, who a couple years ago when the Cubs were making a run to the World Series, they were having to find ways to get him into a lineup every day because of the inconsistencies in his swing. And now look at him, you know, a couple years later, he's an NL MVP candidate. They're probably going to wind up moving him to shortstop where he's going to be playing every day. I mean, it changes fast.
I got a question for you before we get to football. One final thing. We're talking a little hardball here. Give me weigh in on this, too. Hayes, I want you to weigh in on this because we're molding Hayes into
we're trying,
but baseball guy. We're dragging him.
You can rejoin the Braves bandwagon anytime you want.
We're dragging him, kicking and screaming into baseball. Hey, if you had an MVP ballot, okay, right? Give me you two. Tony, you would have voted Yelich first, right?
I would have.
Okay. Would you have voted Baez second? Obviously, Goldschmidt had a big year. Would you have given DeGrom any votes, MVP votes? Not Cy Young. Would you have given DeGrom an MVP vote?
You know, it's he would have been somewhere on my ballot, right? Like, it's hard to vote for the guy. He's clearly the Cy Young for me in the National League. It's not even a debate with that. Look, generally, it obviously goes to a player that's on a playoff team. But is there a player that was more valuable in the National League, seriously, than DeGrom? You know, like, he was insanely valuable and will be going forward. It's hard for me to be somewhere on my ballot, but probably not. You know, those top two spots are pretty solid.
What about Gibby?
Yeah, he wouldn't be he would be one of the first few, maybe, maybe in the fourth slot. But, you know, I'm one of these people that thinks the Cy Young, that's their award, and he won it, and he should have.
What about it?
Yeah, I wouldn't have because I think – the only thing with the MVP for a pitcher is I don't have a problem giving it to a pitcher, but I think you've got to have everything go right. So in DeGrom's case, even though it's not under his control, I think you do need to have that, you know, amazing win-loss record. What was Kershaw the year that he won the MVP? It was 21-3.
Right.
Like, I kind of need to see that. And, you know, to their point about, you know, the Mets didn't make the playoffs. So absolutely, right. Cy Young. But to give a pitcher MVP, I think everything's got to be perfect.
1978, Ron Guidry was 25-3 and didn't win it because Jim Rice had a big year. 25-3 and didn't win it. I would have voted Yelich first, Tony, because I think he should have won the MVP.
Yep.
I would have voted DeGrom second because I don't want him to win it, but it would be the ultimate respect for the year he had. In my mind, the ultimate respect for the year he had.
Sure. So, look, and that makes a lot of sense. It was an unbelievable year for a really, really bad football team.
So, yeah, or baseball team. You're exactly right. Speaking of football, a good transition. Tell me about Bowles and Godbey. Godbey's undefeated. Bowles looked like they were beaten a week ago.
Sure.
And somehow miraculously stayed alive, so they play again. Tell me about the matchup and things to watch here tonight, Tony.
Yeah, an unbelievable comeback. Gibby was on the call of that one last Friday night with Bowles with that terrific second half over there in 6 hours away from Jacksonville last week. It was a heck of a trek. Not so far this week. It's still over in Tallahassee, so we're 3 hours west of Jacksonville tonight here to take on a Godbey team that is 11-0 on the season. We were talking to some of the coaches on our way over here, and they let us know that this is probably, outside of Trinity, the best team that they've played this year, certainly the best offensive line they would have faced here in 2018 tonight coming up against Godbey. So it's a balanced offense. We'll see what the Bulls defense has in store for them. They talk like they probably need to force a couple extra possessions tonight if they're going to have a chance to walk out of this thing with a win and set up a big one again next week in the next round of the playoffs.
And Tony, Godbey has a couple linebackers that are committed to some major programs, right? I think they have one going to Texas
A&M.
Yes.
And look, they are pretty stacked on both sides of the ball. Again, you don't get to 11-0. Without being pretty stacked on both sides. They beat an 8A Mantron team that we all know how good they are early on in the season. This is a really, really good Tallahassee Godbey team. It's going to be an unbelievable test for a Bulls team that honestly this season, guys, has been pretty up and down. And they found their stride, it feels like, maybe a little bit with that comeback win last week. We'll see how much of that momentum they can keep going forward.
How does this team compare? Tony, you've called a lot of these games in recent years. How does this team compare to other Bulls teams?
Not quite. It's not what we've seen from Bulls when they were a perennial state championship contender, and that was the kind of the level of expectation was that they were going to wind up in that Final Four somehow in 3A and then likely playing for a state championship year after year. They're not quite to that standard, and it's, you know, they're also in a district where they're having to play, you know, Trinity Christian every year. Ponte Vedra has been good here recently, so it's a bit more competition for them here in 5A than it was in 3A when they were perennially a state championship contender. So probably not quite at that level that we got used to seeing them under Corky for so many years, but it's still a really, really good football team and a well-coached one, and it gives them a chance against anybody week to week to go out and find a way to win.
Tony Smith will be on the call tonight. Kickoff at 7 o'clock right here on 92.5 FM. Tony, have a good call, man. We appreciate it.
Appreciate it, guys. Looking forward to it.
All right, let's take a break. We've got one segment to go. Hayes and I will wrap up the Thursday program right after this on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's an old rock Thursday. Music the way it should be, or at least used to be, on The Frangie Show.
Steve Miller on Old Rock Thursday. Compliments of our friend Brent Martineau, who got a little help. He needed a little help.
That's
didn't
okay.
He?
That's for okay. Charity.
He did a good job. Here's a marriage that went well: Carmelo Anthony and the Houston Rockets. That
10
was
days.
Good.
Yeah. Wow.
Has Carmelo ever done anything? Won anything?
He's earned a lot of money.
Did he win a title? Didn't he win
did
a title at
Syracuse,
his freshman year? Right.
Yeah. He was one and done. Won the title at Syracuse. And, I mean, he, you know, prolific scorer, but he's never.
Yeah, he's.
I want to say we looked up how many playoff games that he's had in the NBA.
Yeah.
In the offseason, and it's astonishingly low.
I mean, for a guy that has been a 10-time All-Star, there's just not much there, is there?
No. Let me. I still find this incredible, his lack of playoff success. But yeah, I mean, he's been in the league. He came in at 19 years old. He's 34 now. I don't know where it goes from here for him.
He was making the veteran minimum, $2.5 million.
Yeah,
he's not making a lot of money.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see if anybody signs him. He has played a grand total of 72 playoff games in 11 years. I mean, that's remarkable. The most he's ever played in one single postseason is 16 games. That was in 2008-09 with Denver. So, I mean, it's really, you know, in the NBA, that's what it's all about. So, you know, distinguished career, but I don't think he'll be somebody that, you know, has a massive legacy that he leaves behind. He doesn't feel like the kind of player that 10 years from now or 10 years – from his last game is somebody that's still fresh in people's minds.
Who would be the NFL equivalent of Carmelo Anthony?
Played a long time. Probably be a quarterback.
Matt Stafford's yeah. Trending that way.
Yeah, he is. Played a lot, won nothing.
Yeah.
Played a lot, had nice
good
numbers.
Player.
Played in some Pro Bowls, won nothing. Matt Stafford, you'd have to be a quarterback.
Yeah.
Because football's different. Quarterbacks, like all five basketball players,
right.
He's credited with wins and losses and whatnot. So, Pack Hawks tonight.
It's going to be intriguing. This one, these teams are. We kind of expected Seattle to take a step back, and you know, they had 4-5. They're hanging in there. Did not expect Green Bay to be on the outside looking in this far in behind both the Bears and the Vikings. Green Bay 4-4-1. That just seems unthinkable with Aaron Rodgers.
Well,
and I get he's been limited with the knee injury, but he's played in every game. So anyway, it's this is one where the loser is not going to feel very good about themselves.
The Seahawks are 4-5. I thought they'd be better. The Packers 4-4-1. I thought they'd be better. The Atlanta Falcons are 4-5. I thought they'd be better. The Jaguars are 3-6. We all thought they'd be better. Me personally, I thought the Ravens would be better. They're 4-5. There's a lot of teams in that. Dallas is 4-5. I thought they'd be better. There's a lot of teams right in that area where I thought they'd be a little better than they are.
Well, and even like the world champions. I mean, the Eagles are under 500. They're 4-5.
They're a perfect example.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's been. I thought Denver would surprise people. They're 3-6. They're going nowhere fast. They're going to fire their coach. It was interesting, ESPN's Bill Barnwell, who, you know, at least is a thought-provoking analyst. Sometimes I think he's more, you know, off than on. But he had an interesting story today where he ranked the best and worst potential NFL head coaching openings.
Right.
And one thing that I did thought was interesting is he did have the Packers number one. So he expects that Mike McCarthy might be done in Green Bay. And that would be very interesting to see Aaron Rodgers with a new coach. That would attract, I would imagine, every coach outside of maybe Nick Saban.
Gibby's got some news. What do you got, Gib?
Yeah, we told you a few minutes ago Christian Yelich won the National League MVP. The American League goes to Mookie Betts.
It does. I was really torn on the two Red Sox players. I probably would have voted for Betts, Gibby Hayes, because he did everything. He ran. He played defense. But boy, JD Martinez, they don't win it without him either. Where were you going? What's the ballot? How'd the ballot come in?
I'll have to look real quick, but it's hard for me, though. It's hard for, we had this conversation on the podcast. It's hard for a DH to win the MVP. I mean, he only played like 25 games in the field this year, and it's tough for a DH to win it.
Mookie Betts batted 346.
Right.
That was 16 points higher than Martinez. and 20 points higher than Yelich. So, fantastic year for Mookie Betts. This one, though, from an outsider's perspective, is somewhat surprising because it seemed like Martinez, the final week of the regular season, was more tracking for it because he came so close to the Triple Crown, right? He ended up second in batting, second in home runs,
right,
and led in RBI. So
he got, by the way, 28 of 30.
Bested.
So
not a lot of controversy, really, with the voters. It was pretty clear-cut for them.
J.D. got one first-place vote.
Who did?
J.D. got one.
Who got the other one?
Not seeing that, but only one first-place vote for J.D. Martinez, again, for Mookie Betts, 28 of 30.
All right. The by the way, the only thing I thought could hurt Betts, because he's the leadoff batter, he's not in an RBI slot, he only knocked in 80 runs. Now, he hit 346 and hit 32 home runs. That's plenty. Very good defensive outfielder, defensive right fielder. But he only knocked in 80. That's what made me wonder, you know, in today's day and age of offense, you kind of got to do all three. You kind of got to leave the yard. No one with 18 home runs is ever winning an MVP again. It's Mike Trout. So Mike Trout got one, J.D. Martinez got one, and Mookie Betts got the other 28. But think about it. Nobody with 18 home runs is ever winning an MVP again. Ever.
Yeah.
Nobody that hits 302 is ever winning an MVP again, right? Even though Baez hit 290 and finished second, it's not going to happen. I mean, it's unlikely. You kind of got to hit north of 320, whatever, 315, 320. You pretty much have to leave the yard 30 times, and you generally have to knock in 100. That's why I was a little surprised with 80 RBI, but he led off too, which is a big part of that.
Yeah, a big part of that, and it's always interesting for me to look and see how many players hit 20 home runs in Major League Baseball, because when I was a kid, that was a pretty good number.
Right.
Any care to guess on how many players this year in Major League Baseball hit at least 20 home runs?
I can't even render a guess.
Maybe you got a guess?
Big number. I'm
100?
Wow. You go get a lottery ticket.
Okay.
It's exactly 100.
100,
wow.
Yeah. But
100 players hit 20 home runs this year.
Is that right?
Yep.
How about
and
that?
Then there was 107 that hit 19.
How about that? How about 30? Can you find me 30? I mean, how many 30?
Yeah, sure.
How many guys hit 30 home runs? 100 guys hit 20 home runs. How about that?
Let's see what we got here. Gibby, you may need to extend me second here.
Yeah, play that music, Gib.
I'm
curious
okay,
now.
You got me?
100 right. guys. Wow, 100 guys hit 20 home runs.
Let's see what we got here.
That was a wild guess, by the way. I didn't know. So
yeah, you were dead on. 30 home runs, 27 players.
That's a lot of players.
Unbelievable.
That's a lot
it's a
of
huge
guys.
Number.
Folks, that's our program. Don't go anywhere, though. Bulls football. Bulls versus Godby comes up right now. Tony Smith on the call here on 92.5 FM. So long.